Support for WPR comes from Boardman Clark, a Wisconsin law firm dedicated to the art of listening and the power of informed discourse, serving businesses, individuals, and local governments throughout the state. BoardmanClark.com.
Ideas at WPR.org and like us on Facebook at the Ideas Network.
Tonight on Old Time Radio Drama, ride west to Frontier Town in an adventure from 1952. George Burns and Gracie Allen will be taking in a veteran in a time of hard housing in post-war America. Johnny Dollar goes to the Skull Canyon Mine tonight. We'll have X-1 and we'll begin a 10-part series of adventures by Morse. It's called The City of the Dead. I'm Norman Gilliland. We'll start by going to Medicine Creek, where taxpayer, advocate, rancher McCarty is gunned down and his widow incites resistance despite Chad Remington's effort to calm things down. The big question, where's the tax money collected by the mayor and his crony? In tonight's episode called Death and Taxes, from November 28, 1952.
Frontier Town, the saga of the Roaring West. Frontier Town. El Paso, Cheyenne, Calgary, Tombstone. Frontier Town. Here is the adventurous story of the early West, the tamed and the untamed. From the Pecos to Powder River, Dodge City to Poker Flat. These are the towns they fought to live in and lived to fight for. Teeming crucibles of pioneer freedom. Frontier Town!
Frontier Town. Yeah, I guess that's what you'd call Dos Rios. The only reason I mentioned Dos Rios is that I live there. Or to be more accurate, it seems to be the base of my operations. Because you see, fortunately or unfortunately, I'm a lawyer. And out in the frontier country, although lawyers aren't too well regarded, they sure are necessary. If you're ever in Dos Rios and want to look me up, the office is over at Cherokee O'Bannon's livery stable, and the shingle says, my name is Chad Remington. Well, as you can imagine, the frontier has attracted all kinds of people, and that brings me all kinds of clients. One of the rarest birds I've yet to run across I met just a few weeks ago. Rare? Believe me, he's even more of a character than that ex-medicine man, Cherokee O'Bannon. Bright and early one morning when I picked up my mail, I found a letter postmarked from a town about 200 miles away, sort of a new town they'd called Roaring River. I'd heard about Roaring River because it was becoming famous as the bailiwick of a self-appointed justice of the peace, a former mule skinner. And folks say he skinned a lot of other things besides mules. A salty old character whose name is Pegleg Cooper. Well, the letter wasn't from Pegleg, but from a rancher down there who signed himself Jim Charlton and urged me to come down and offered me a sizable fee if I could help him. Charlton didn't say exactly what the nature of his trouble was, but the fee was tempting to a man who has a few thoughts of getting married. Besides, I had a hankering to at least have a look-see at Judge Pegleg Cooper. Well, while Cherokee and I were riding over to Roaring River, Jim Charlton's trouble suddenly came to a head. One of the older and larger cattlemen, Tulsa Blaggett, paid an unwelcome call on Charlton and his daughter, Betsy.
Charlton, I'm giving you a better-than-even break by coming here and talking to you, and if you know what's good for you, you'll quit talking back.
Tulsa, I didn't ask you here. I don't want you here. And most of all, anything you have to tell me goes in one ear and out the other.
Yeah? Well, I'm not surprised. Apparently, there's nothing between them ears to stop it.
Daddy, don't let him talk to you like that.
Kid, if I were you, I'd remember the old saying, brat should be seen and not heard.
Doggone it, Tulsa. I've heard enough out of you. Now go on, clear out of my house.
In other words, Charlton, you want to end up like the other nesters did around here.
I'll take my chances. You and your kind never scared me none. And for one, I'm not selling this homestead to you for 10 cents on the dollar.
You know something, Charlton? I got a feeling in my bones that you're going to have a fire here. And after that, your place won't be worth 2 cents on the dollar.
What? You dirty crook! Don't you try to threaten us!
You little loudmouth. Who do you think you are, calling me a crook? Shut up!
Threaten my daughter, will you? You! You!
Good for you, Daddy. You gave him his comeuppance, all right?
I'm not fooling, Blanket. If you're not out of here in 30 seconds, I'm going to pick you up and throw you out. Throw you out through the window.
All right. All right, Charlton. But I'm coming back. And when I do come back, which won't be long, I'm coming back to move in. Well, Tulsa Blaggett did come back. He came back about 4 hours later. Came back with 6 of his hired gunslingers, set fire to the cow barn, and then, surrounding the house, laid siege to it. As Cherokee and I were approaching the homestead, we suddenly became aware that something was wrong.
Tad, my boy, have you made any plans as to what you'll do with that fee Mr. Charles was supposed to pay you?
Mr. O'Bannon, sir, any plans that I might have to do with solids, not liquids.
Too bad. Although I once knew of a man carrying a hip flask through the Rockies. When it froze, making the liquid a solid, he assured me it had its advantages.
Huh?
Didn't need a chaser.
Well, you need a chaser, Cherokee. You need someone to chase around after you and see that you behave like a...
Billy Blue Blazes, Chad. Sounds like shooting.
Yeah, and if we're going in the right direction, the shooting's coming from the Charlton place. Unhook that .45, Cherokee. You may be needing it.
Come on, you somnolent shuffle gussie. Get up there.
Cherokee, look. There's a whole gang down there pumping lead into the Charlton house.
The foul skunks. Let's see if they can take it as well as throw it.
Nice shooting, O'Bannon. Look, they're starting to run. Now let's get down there and really pour it on.
Well, that's about all there is to it, Mr. Remington.
Except to thank you again and again and again for running them off.
Ain't nothing of it, Miss Betsy. Our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Now... I'm no coward, Mr. Remington.
Well, look,
but...
let's just make that plain, Chad. Shall we, Jim?
You bet, Chad. As I was saying, I'm not afraid of Tulsa Blaggett or anybody else. But if there's a peaceable, legal way of settling a thing like this, that's what I want to do. That's why I wrote to you.
Well, the legal way of doing it is to prove that Blaggett is trying to drive you out of here by force.
Which, of course, I can't do, because all the men who attacked the house were wearing handkerchiefs over their faces.
Besides... even though Daddy won't admit it, everybody in the whole Roaring River country knows that Tulsa Blaggett and the judge are playing it hand in hand.
You mean Judge Pegleg Cooper?
Oh, don't listen to Bessie, Chad. She's just repeating gossip.
I am not. Everybody says old Pegleg's just using that job he gave himself to feather his own nest.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Well, I will admit Judge Cooper drags everyone he can get into that court of his and fines them every penny they got. But he's as tough as nails and trying to do an honest job, according to his own lights.
According to his own lights. Cattleman elected him, and he's backing him up.
Well, that's something that remains to be proved, Betsy. Before I make up my own mind, I'd like to meet Pegleg Cooper and size him up.
Well, nothing hard to that. He owns a saloon and holds his court right there in the saloon.
Very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Come, Chad. Let us remount our horses and meander down to Pegleg Cooper's court.
I'm gonna need to shut up and clear out of courtroom. Yes. Well then, Injun, did you or didn't you take the saddle off and Bill Lemke's horse?
Me no take him. Just borrow him.
Ooh. So you just borrowed the saddle. All right, Injun.
Then we'll drop the charges of larceny again, yeah.
Well, you good judge.
We'll just drop the charge of larceny and we'll charge your rent for the use of the saddle. How much money, wampum, you got on you?
Oh, got him $21.
$21, huh? All right. Court finds you guilty of not paying rent for the saddle and fines you $21. Now pay up and clear out of here. Pawnee! Pawnee, get the engine money. Then open the bar again. Court's adjourned.
Never in all my days have I seen justice of that kind, this town.
Well, peculiar, but mighty effective.
Yeah, effective for the judge's pocketbook. I tell you that he never gives...
What's up, Jim? What are you staring at?
Hey, see that barrel-chested buzzer who just walked in?
Yeah.
That's Tulsa Blaggett.
Jim, you get over in the corner with the crowd when Blaggett can't see you. Came down here to watch the judges work. This is going to give me the opportunity of observing the other member of the team at one and the same time.
Watch it, Chad. Here he comes.
Hiya, boys. Hiya, Judge.
What brings you down to the Blind Judge's Cafe so early in the day?
They just closed a little deal, Judge. A little cattle deal, and I feel like celebrating.
Yeah.
Come on, boys. Everybody up to the bar. The drinks are on me.
Come on, boys. Barney.
Yeah.
Better bust the bung into a brand new barrel of beverage.
I'm sure, Judge. Come on, boys. Step up and sing out your orders.
Hey, you there. You, with a fancy shirt. Didn't you hear me? I said I'm buying the drinks. Everybody up to the bar.
Thanks just the same, mister, but I'll take a rain check on that.
I said you're drinking with me.
I said I'm not.
All right, then. I'll drag you to the bar.
That's it, Sam. Hang it on him. Stop it, you hear? You're breaking up my cafe.
Sorry, Judge, but I'd rather break up your cafe than have him break my jaw. Say no.
And even if he comes too, I'm sorry to say he won't buy drinks for a long while.
Come here, you. Barney.
Yeah, Judge.
Close up the bar. We're holding court.
Right, sir, Judge. Bar's closed and court's in session. Judge Cooper presiding.
And now, young man, we're going to get on with your trial.
All right, Judge, but I'd like to know what the charges are against me.
Oh, they ain't very much. Assault and battery, mayhem, inciting a riot, and destruction and demolition of personal property. You pleading guilty or not guilty?
That depends. What'll it cost if I plead guilty?
Well, maybe $40.
Uh-huh. What'll the fine be if I plead not guilty?
Not guilty will cost you $100. How do you plead?
Guilty as charged, Your Honor. Here's your $40.
Thanks, son. And just a minute. You must have about $70 left.
Or 68, to be exact.
Now, that is strange, because I'm just about to fine you $68 in addition to that 40.
Now, wait a minute. What's that fine for?
Well, I'll tell you. Mr. Blaggett came in and invited everybody to have a drink on him. I reckon he'd have spent about $68 in my cafe. But now that you laid him out cold, I'm deprived of that business, and so you are in restraint of trade. That's all. Barney,
yes.
Put this money in the drawer and escort the defendant outside.
Why, that good for nothing, sneaking, soap-headed snake in the grass.
Let it go, Cherokee. Judge may have my money now, but he isn't going to keep it long. Believe me, he isn't.
How much did we take in today?
I'll tell you in a second, Judge. Let's see. $419.
Pretty good day.
Yes.
Pretty good day. Well, put out that lamp. Let's be getting on bed.
Right you are, Judge.
Yeah.
I got a candle here and
don't
I...
Don't move, gentlemen. Stand right where you are. What
you...
I know you can't see, but I've got you both nicely covered. I've been outside in the dark for a while. My eyes have gotten used to it.
Why, you pussy, frittin' cold cat, who are you?
Why, Judge, I'm the man who came in to relieve you of that $419.
Yeah? Well, I've heard your voice somewhere before, and it won't take me long to recollect your name.
You can save yourself all that mental energy, Judge. My name is, well, it's the Texas Kid.
And now, Pawnee, I'll just take that little sack, and then I'll be bidding you two highbinders good night. So long, gents, and unpleasant dreams.
We'll return to the exciting second act of Six Gun Justice, our frontier town adventure, in just a few moments. Now, Frontier Town.
Well, sir, even from the little I've told you about Peg Leg Cooper, I'll bet you can imagine exactly how he felt with me in that ridiculous disguise coming in and depriving him of his, well, shall I say, hard-earned money. That was hardly sunup next morning when the judge started rounding up every last soul in the county, and by 10 o'clock, his so-called courtroom was jammed to the rafters and rocking.
Yeah, keep quiet!
Shut up!
Quiet! Quiet!
Now we'll get on with the question. Some foul crook calling himself a Texas kid stole $419 from me. By the great horn spoon, we're finding out who it is if we have to stay here till Judgment Day.
Your Honor, may I ask one question?
Huh? What do you got to do with this?
Well, Judge, I don't know anything about the Texas kid, and as you proved so conclusively yesterday, I probably know very little about the law.
Well?
Just this. You've accused everybody of stealing your money, but so far you haven't proved that you lost it.
Are you loco, or do you think I am?
Certainly, I don't think you are, but as a fair-minded judge, I know that you'd demand proof, so why shouldn't we? Now, have you double-checked? Have you looked in the cash drawer?
Why, you puddle-headed, overgrown Pawnee!
Yeah, Judge?
Pull out the cash drawer and show this concerned imbecile what's in it.
Right over us.
Well, hurry up.
Here it is. Catch. The drawer ain't empty. Look, there's money in it.
Oh. You flannel-mouth going to shut up? Where am I going to have to find a lot of you? 250, 320, 340, 350, 351.
Well, what do you know? I would have sweared he took the whole thing.
Of course he took the whole thing. Must have snuck in during the night and put part of it back. $68 missing. You wouldn't know nothing about that, would you, son?
$68 is what you fined me for being in restraint of trade yesterday.
Mm-hmm. And naturally, you don't know nothing about the Texas kid.
First time I ever heard of him was right in here, Judge. Why don't you appoint me as special deputy to your court?
Deputy? What in corn chowder fur?
Well, I think if you gave me a few days riding around the country, I might be able to find the Texas kid for you. Or if not that, I might be some help in rounding up the rascals who've been causing a real trouble around here.
Mm-hmm. You know, mister, I just got a sneaking notion that if anybody could locate that there Texas kid, you're the Renahan could do it. Yes, sir. I hereby appoint you special deputy to this here now court. Now go on, clear out of here and get busy.
Right, you are, Your Honor.
Just a minute, young fella. Inside of 48 hours, if you don't get results, I'm hailing you into court and fining you $500 for wasting time being a smart aleck and making a dog-eared donkey out of a respectable judge. Now go on, beat it.
I'm laughing now, but believe you me, when it happened, I was laughing on the other side of my face. All my life, I'd heard of smart lawyers, but if there'd been a mirror handy and I'd looked into it, I'd have been face to face with a lawyer who was too smart. Well, knowing that the judge meant business this time and being faced with a fine and probably a jail sentence, I took the bull by the horns and started out to make good on my promise. Not knowing the whereabouts of Tulsa Blackett's ranch, I gathered up Jim and Betsy Charlton and had them ride with Cherokee and me to show us the way.
And despite their cross-questioning, this time I tried my best to keep my big mouth shut.
Chad, you've got something up your sleeve. Now, I can see it all over your face. Won't you please tell us what this is all about?
Yes, Mr. Remington. Why have you got us all racing out to Tulsa's ranch as if our life depended on it?
Patience, my friends, patience. As a special deputy of His Honor's court, I'm going to be mighty sure of my evidence before I make any allegations. But since we're practically at the door to Blaggett's ranch, rein up. I have a feeling you'll soon find out.
Well, girl.
All right, come on. I think I'm about to make an arrest. Well, the four of us walked thither and yon around the Blaggett Ranch just looking for something, anything. As the time was getting shorter and my chances even slimmer, suddenly Cherokee found something.
Sweet strawberry blondes, Chad. Look at this.
Why, that's nothing but a little piece of steer hide.
It sure is a piece of steer hide, Betsy, but don't you see what it is? It's a piece of steer hide with our brand on it. And how our brand got over here on Blaggett's ranch will take a bit of explaining.
Yeah, we're lucky, that's all. It certainly explains itself. Even though the men were masked who raided your place the other day, this piece of steer hide will be marked Exhibit A in my case against Tulsa Blaggett for cattle rustling. Come on, we're going inside. Well, Tulsa, you coming with me?
Oh, Remington, you're crazier than a loon, that's what you are. Why should I go down to that old coot's court?
Well, a good reason might be because I'm telling you to. As a deputy of the court, I've got a bench warrant for you.
Look, you're starting to annoy me now more than you did yesterday.
If you had a brain in your stupid head, you wouldn't stand there just begging Chad to annoy you the same way again.
Yeah. Well, did you ever hear of a thing called false arrest?
Yeah, I think I have.
Well, you just heard Charlton say he couldn't identify me as the man who raided his ranch.
And that's the truth. I can't.
Well, then, what do you think you're going to gain dragging me down to court? Because the judge can't find me guilty without no evidence. And if he doesn't, I'm going to have you locked up for false arrest.
Blaggett, I'm just quaking in my boots. Now, come on.
You can say it all you want. I'm not leaving here.
Well, I happen to think you are.
Yeah, well, I don't think I am.
Chad, he's got hold of his gun?
I saw him, Cherokee. He's welcome to clear his holster.
And that's just what I'm going to do.
Suffering starlight. That kind of shooting I never seen before, Chad.
Cherokee, pick up a gentleman's gun for him and bring it down to court. We'll label that Exhibit B on another charge of resisting an officer.
Well, Judge, where's that big talking deputy you appointed yourself?
Oh, I reckon he'll be coming in for an evening.
How come you reckon that? If he don't find you the Texas kid, think he's going to come back and face the $500 you threatened him with?
Yes, you would.
You do?
And I reckon I wouldn't keep the $500 long if I got it. Remember the other night when... Yeah. Well, here he comes now and he's got Tulsa Blaggett in tow.
Well, Your Honor... Can you convene your court for a few minutes?
Judge, I'm warning you.
Shut up, Blaggett. Arnie, close the bar and tell him to keep quiet.
Yes, quiet.
This court is here and now in session. What are the charges, Deputy?
Well, over in my part of the country, we might call it something else.
You mean down in Texas?
I've never been in Texas, Judge. Honest Injun. But to get on with the charges, I think you'd probably call them grand larceny, conversion of stolen property, and attempted homicide.
Uh-huh. What does that mean in English?
Cattle rustling, Your Honor. 23 head.
Well, hold the cooked-up, ridiculous lion.
Shut up.
And here are the brands off two of Jim Charlton's steers, which Mr. O'Bannon here found in Blaggett's corral. That's entered as Exhibit A on the rustling charge.
You mean you got another charge against him?
Yes, sir. Resisting an officer. And as Exhibit B, here's the gun he pulled on me.
Well, this is nothing but a frame-up. And you ain't gonna get...
Look out, Tulsa's grabbed his gun on the table.
Here. Yeah. And I'm gonna use it as a... Oh,
now, came over this way, son. I'll bust him with the gavel.
No, thanks, Judge. But watch those glasses, because here he comes. No!
Oh, woe is us, Chad. You busted up the judge's saloon again.
Yeah, looks like Cherokee's right, Judge. How much is the fine going to be this time?
Well, I ain't going to let you off lightly for a second offense. No, sir. For assault and battery, quid pro quo. That's Latin. And for catching a double-dyed, ding-busted, dead-ratted, sneaking wrestler I couldn't get the goods on, my fine is, you've got to attend the best gosh darn party ever held in the Blind Justice Cafe for the best two-fisted fighter ever to hit this part of the country.
Hold still there, you broken-down hay burner.
Mr. Remington, I'll never, never forget how you out-slicked that crook.
He did a fine job, didn't he, Judge?
Oh, good enough. What about me? Ain't I letting him go home without catching the Texas kid for me? You young varmint. Someday you ought to go down to Texas and look for the cuss.
You never can tell what Chad might do for $68, Judge.
Nor me neither.
Am I to read between the lines, Your Honor, and infer that because the way this case turned out, you might do what Blaggett is going to do the other day? Set him up at the house?
Well, now, just a minute, Cherokee.
What's the matter?
I'll admit I'm in favor of you having some suds.
Good boy.
But you're not going to get the suds till you get back home.
Good night.
And the kind of suds you're going to get won't do your insides much good, but they'll be a big help to your outside. I'm talking about soap suds.
Goodbye.
Goodbye is right. Adios, Judge.
Adios.
So long, Charlton.
Bye, Cat.
When you get your cattle sold, Jim, that's plenty of time to be sending me my fee. All right, get started, boy.
Bye. Bye.
Suds he offers me after I found that steer hide.
Well, Cherokee, if you hadn't found it, there wouldn't have been any suds either. Because with the judge looking for me, there would have been no soap.
Collaring the criminals, those who are capable of, and in fact do, siphon off the public funds in death and taxes. That was Chad Remington in Frontier Town, and we heard it as a broadcast from November 28, 1952. George Burns and Gracie Allen are waiting in the wings, waiting to take in a veteran, and not just anyone, as it turns out. We'll hear all about it in just a moment as old-time radio drama continues here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wisconsin Public Radio is a place for great stories, news from around the state, and so much more. There's always something new to discover, and membership support helps make it all possible. You can see our program schedules at WPR.org.
We have a new, stronger signal at 107.9 FM. I'm the Ideas Network Director, Cheryl Gasser, inviting you to listen to the Ideas Network, where Wisconsin connects.
We begin with George's resolution to keep his temper even, even when Gracie's mother plans a visit. And Gracie, who actually was originally the straight man, as you might say, in the Burns and Allen team, plays the straight man tonight to Mel Blanc's postman. We'll find out who this veteran is that gets taken in, and who else gets taken in, for that matter, in tonight's episode of The Burns and Allen Show from January 3rd, 1946.
It's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen. With yours truly, Bill Goodwin, and the music of Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. For deep down laughs and listening enjoyment, it's George and Gracie. And for deep down coffee drinking enjoyment, it's Maxwell House, with extra flavor in the blend because of choice Latin American coffees skillfully combined. Extra flavor in the cup because Radiant Roast develops the full flavor of every coffee bean. And the result is that today more people buy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world. Now let's look in for our first visit of the new year at the Burns home.
I'm so proud of you, George. You've kept your New Year's resolution for 3 whole days.
Well, it's because I've got a strong character.
Oh, and such a difficult resolution. To smile and be pleasant to everybody and not let things upset you.
I just made up my mind, that's all.
Ah, you've been wonderful, dear. When I asked you if I could buy a new hat, you said no with such a sweet smile.
That's right.
And when I bought it anyhow, you just went quietly into the bathroom and ran cold water on your head.
Yeah, I'm a changed man.
Nothing seems to bother you at all. Not even last night's terrible dinner. The soup was too salty, the potatoes were raw, and the chops were burned.
It's pretty bad, all right.
Oh, yeah. But did you get angry? No. You just took off your apron and said, well, I'll do better next time.
Well, I just resolved that nothing will upset me. I'm going to smile no matter what.
Well, I'm glad to hear
even
that.
Even when I stutter, I smile.
Yeah. Oh, George, I have some news for you.
What?
My mother's coming to visit us. Well, George, where's your smile?
I'm smiling.
But, George, would you rather my mother didn't come?
Well,
don't be afraid to tell me. Ours isn't that kind of a marriage. If you don't want her here, just say so. I'll understand.
Well, as long as you feel that way,
Oh, yeah? Well, she's coming anyway.
Look, honey, we don't get along. Your mother hates me.
Oh, she does not. There are just a couple of things about you she can't stand. if you changed them, she'd be crazy about you.
What couple of things?
Your looks and your personality.
Yeah, she's mad about me.
Oh, my goodness. All this fuss because my dear, sweet mother wants to visit us. Don't you know that I'm her own flesh and blood?
Make it just her blood. When you get her flesh, I'm leaving you.
I promise you, Mama will only stay with us until the painters finish her new house.
When will the painters finish?
Well, they can't stop painting until the house is built.
They haven't built the house yet?
Well, they will as soon as they find a lot.
Your folks haven't even got a lot?
Well, you can't buy one without money.
And when will they get the money?
Papa should get a job any day now.
In other words, your mother drops in on us for around 30 years. I'm sorry, Gracie, but it's either your mother or me. If she comes, I go.
You mean I've got to choose between my mother and the man I love?
That's it.
Well, there's only one choice I can make.
Naturally.
I'm going to miss you, George.
You mean ta-ta? Well, I won't go. I'm not leaving.
Well, I'm sure there's room for both of you. We'll fix up the den for Mother.
Honey, look. Los Angeles is filled with returned servicemen looking for a place to stay. Now, if we're going to fix up the den, let's fix it up for one of them.
Well, are there really a lot of homeless servicemen?
Well, just listen to these ads in the morning paper. Discharged soldier needs home for family. Discharged soldier desperately needs room. Discharged soldier must have lodging.
Oh, those poor men. No place to live, and the army has fired them from their nice job.
Gracie.
Oh, George, you go down to the draft board and see if you can get those men their jobs back.
Believe me, that they don't want. Just a place to live.
All right. I'll tell Mama to stay in San Francisco, and we'll fix up the den for a serviceman.
Now, that's the spirit. Gracie, when the den is fixed...
Yeah, come in.
Good morning, folks.
Good morning, Meredith.
Hi, Meredith. What's new?
Well, I've got a new haircut, George. Went off the one this morning.
Well, that's interesting.
Yes, I enjoyed it. I usually cut my hair in the house, but it's such a nice day that I went out and cut it in the yard.
Oh.
Looks like you use the hedge clippers.
No, no, they're a little too heavy to get a good grip on.
Oh, yes, heavy.
Would you like some breakfast, Meredith?
No, thanks, Gracie. Matter of fact, I just dropped in for a minute to tell George to finish my joke about the porcupine.
If you don't mind,
I started to tell it at your party, but I never did get to pull the snapper.
Meredith, if you start that again, so help me.
George, remember your resolution. Smile.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead, Meredith. Pull the snapper.
Okay. Ha! Speaking of porcupines, I'm reminded of the little blue-eyed...
Meredith, I remember how it began. Just tell me the finish. The snapper.
Gee, I'd like to oblige, George, but I memorized the joke just the way it is in my book. And if I don't start at the beginning, I can't remember how to pull the snapper.
Well, let her snap.
Speaking of porcupines, I'm reminded of the little blue-eyed toddler who chanced to go into the zoo one day.
You have to start from the beginning every time?
That's right, Gracie. Speaking of porcupines... I am reminded of the little blue-eyed toddler...
You couldn't stop now and then keep going?
No, no, afraid I couldn't.
Wow, that's amazing.
Speaking of porcupines...
I can't believe it, George.
Gracie, listen. Let him finish before the little blue-eyed toddler grows up and gets married.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I won't say another word, Meredith.
Speaking of porcupines, I'm reminded of the little blue-eyed toddler who chanced to go into the zoo one day with her governess. As they passed the porcupine cage, the little tyke was heard to exclaim, "My, what a strange-looking beast. What do you say to that?" interrogated the curious governess. Whereupon the child replied, "Because he has such a...
Well,
how do you like that? A forgotten the snapper.
Well, that's fine.
But don't worry, George. I'll go read my book and brush up on it.
I wish you wouldn't bother, Meredith.
No, it's no trouble at all. After all, I live right next door.
Yes, I know.
That makes it mighty handy when a fellow's got some snappers he wants to pull. I'll be back.
I wonder if Meredith has a long lease on that house next door.
Oh, yeah, he probably has. With this terrible housing shortage, anyone who has a place is hanging on to it.
Say, that reminds me. Let's go in the den and fix it up for that service.
All right. Oh, I'll bet this room will look mighty good to a boy who's been on those islands like Okinawa and Guadalcanal and KP and Guam.
KP? that's an island?
Well, it must be. Meredith Wilson was in the Army for 3 years, and he said he spent most of it on KP.
Oh, yeah. It's a small island surrounded by dishwater. I started to hang these pictures here the other day. Do you think the serviceman will like them?
Oh, yes. And I'll run to the market and get some tomatoes to scatter around.
What for?
Well, I heard dozens of returning servicemen say the first thing they want to do is find a beautiful tomato.
Yes, they like vegetables. Just hand me the hammer and nail.
Oh, please, George, don't do any hammering. We haven't any iodine to put on your finger.
Don't be silly. Give me the hammer.
Oh, all right, here.
And I'm not going to hit my finger. Who are you calling?
Phil Goodwin, to bring over his first aid kit.
You're wasting your time. I'm not going to hit my finger.
Hello, hello, Bill? Would you rush right over with your first aid kit? George just hit his finger.
Ouch!
With a hammer.
There you are, George. Your finger's all bandaged.
Thanks, Bill.
Oh, what do you think of our idea of taking in a veteran, Bill?
Oh, it's swell, Gracie. We got a Marine sergeant staying at our house.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And boy, when they've been overseas for a while, how they love to celebrate. Every night I take the sergeant out and we make the round.
Well, it's nice of you to do that, Bill.
Oh, well, I don't mind, Gracie. She's very pretty.
I should have known.
Well, I don't think we'll have a service woman. It's too dangerous. I wouldn't want her to walk in here, starve for the sight of a man, and find my George.
No, she's done her part. We shouldn't let her down now.
There goes the comedian. Well, I'm not anxious to have any lonesome female around, even if she is pretty.
She'd probably want me to dance with her and go driving with her, and she might even want to go parking someplace and... Say, that's not bad.
Get John!
Just kidding, dear.
Oh, there's Meredith at the door.
Oh, no. Not the porcupine again. Look, Gracie, slip out the back way. Run next door to Meredith's and get that joke book of his.
Oh, in case he forgets the story again, huh?
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Now hurry.
Yeah, all right, dear.
Hey, shall I open the door, George?
Bolt it.
Bolt it?
Bolt it.
Well, okay. What's the big idea?
Meredith insists on telling me jokes from that corny book of his.
Oh, George, you don't know how poor Meredith feels when you don't laugh at his jokes. What if people didn't laugh when you told him? I guess you do know how he feels.
Never mind.
Anyone home in there? I'm back with the snapper.
Be real quiet, Bill. Maybe he'll go away.
The coast is clear, George. Meredith left.
I wish we could get him to leave that house next door. If I hear, ha! Speaking of porcupines, once more, I'll blow my top.
Well, George, I got it. Here's Meredith's joke book.
Oh, wonderful.
You know, I've been reading some of the stories in it. They're silly.
You said it. Especially the one about porcupines.
Ha! Speaking of porcupines.
Oh, no.
Say, Meredith, don't you think when folks hear that familiar strain, just about everybody knows what you're playing?
I'm sure they do, Bill. I think practically the whole world must know the Missouri Waltz. Listen just for a moment.
Yes, the Missouri is certainly a name that's just as familiar to American music as the river itself is to the American scene. As you know, the Missouri River is part and parcel of so many names rich in American lore. Why, its headwaters are formed by the Madison, the Gallatin, the Jefferson. Then as it winds across the Great Plains, it picks up the Big Sioux, the Kansas, the Osage, all names so familiar to our American scene. And I can't help thinking, too, how today there's another name that's become part and parcel of our American scene, of so many American homes. It's the name Maxwell House, signifying a coffee blend of true distinction, combining these fine Latin American coffees, Manizales for mellowness. Medellin's for richness. Other choice Latin American coffees for vigor. And Bucaramanga's for full body. So, it's no wonder that the famous name Maxwell House is known all over this great land of ours for full-flavored, fine coffee. Good to the last drop.
Oh, George, I'm so glad you talked me into fixing up the dent for a serviceman. I had no idea the housing shortage was so bad.
It's bad, all right. And there seems to be more people looking for houses in Los Angeles than any place else. I wonder why.
Well, it's our famous California climate, of course. As long as we have this weather, there'll never be enough houses to hold the people.
There won't, huh?
No, they keep washing away.
I hadn't thought of that.
Oh, yes. Los Angeles has the biggest housing problem of any city. Do you know there's actually a family living in the balcony of an all-night movie theater?
That must be a strange life.
Yeah, but they're getting used to it. They go to sleep at 10 minutes to Mildred Pierce and wake up at 7:30 spellbound.
Well, that's a good time to wake up. The fella can borrow Gregory Peck's razor and shave himself.
Yeah, and then there's a young married couple I know. They finally found a place. Just one closet.
Well, one closet ought to be big enough for their clothes.
Not after they got the bed and stove in there.
Oh, the closet is all they have.
Yes, oh, but they have lovely neighbors.
Well, that helps.
Yeah, the people who live in the bathroom are very friendly.
Well, let's decide on the serviceman who's going to get our dent.
All right. I don't care who he is as long as he's not a sergeant.
What's the matter with the sergeant?
Oh, nothing, but they don't need our help. They're all taken care of.
They are?
Oh, yes. All the soldiers say, the minute I'm out, I'm going to take care of that sergeant of mine.
Well, yes, the boys love those sergeants. Look, Gracie, why don't you read all the ads in the paper and pick out the serviceman who needs a room the most?
Yeah, that's a good idea. And then I'll pick out a serviceman just as soon as I see who's at the door.
Good morning, Mrs. Burns.
Good morning, Mr. Postman. How are you today?
In fine fettle, Mrs. Burns. Under my glowing skin, my red and white corpuscles are calling Happy New Year to one another.
Oh, how nice of you. You know, I'm sorry I got you into trouble last week by telling you to bring Mamie to our party. I thought Mamie was your wife.
No, her name is Bertha, but I usually call her Butch.
And what does she call you?
Oh, you're much too young to hear that.
Well, when your wife found out about Mamie, I'll bet she really made a fuss, huh?
You know, Mrs. Burns, I didn't hear her say one cross word.
You didn't?
No, I was unconscious for 2 days.
Well, you know, it's so unfair the way she bullies you. You're the breadwinner, but she acts like she gave you the roof over your head.
If she could lift it, that's where I'd get
it. Well, Mr. Postman, why don't you leave?
Where would I go? There's such a housing shortage.
Yeah, that's true. We just fixed over our den for an ex-serviceman.
My wife's brother, an ex-serviceman, is living with us. But there was no room in the house. We had to put some gunny sacks in the corner of the garage.
Yes. How uncomfortable.
Yes, I hardly sleep a wink.
Well, Mr. Postman, look at it this way. You owe him something. While he was over there fighting and risking his life, you were home with your wife where it was safe.
Goodbye, Mrs. Burns. Remember, keep smiling.
And I found the serviceman who needs a room the most.
Good.
Now listen to this. Place to live urgently needed by returned soldier with wife, small daughter, baby son, and parrot.
But, honey, where would they all sleep?
Oh, don't worry about that, dear. I figured it all out. The soldier and his wife will take our room. The children will take the den. I'll take the couch in the living room. And we'll hang the parrot's cage in the pantry.
And where will I sleep?
We'll put an ad in the paper.
No, you don't.
Oh, well, we'll work that out. Now, listen to the rest of my schedule. In the morning, you get up at 5 o'clock.
I haven't been to bed yet.
Well, that saves you the trouble of getting up. Now, you wake the soldier. He takes the shower and wakes his wife. She takes the shower and wakes me. I take my shower, and then the soldier's wife bathes the 2 children.
How about me?
Oh, you're big enough to bathe yourself.
There's any hot water left.
Well, next comes breakfast. First the soldier eats, and then his wife eats, Then the children eat, and then I eat, and then the parrot eats.
Then I have breakfast.
No, by that time it's lunchtime.
Nice schedule.
Now, first the soldier eats lunch, then his wife eats, then the children eat, then I eat, and then the parrot eats.
Oh, no, he doesn't. I just ate the parrot for breakfast. Now, look, honey, as much as I want to help that family, this just won't work.
Oh, well, you answer the door. I'll go and try to figure something out.
Yeah, do that. Come in.
Hello, George.
Should have looked first.
See, I was over here a little while ago, but the door was locked.
Really? Care to step outside and see if it'll happen again?
Well, later I might, but right now I want to tell you about the wonderful idea I've got. George, how would you like to go into vaudeville with me?
Vaudeville?
I've memorized that whole book of humor stories and anecdotes. We'll call the act Meredith Wilson and Straight Man.
Meredith Wilson and Straight Man.
He's the fellow who asked the comedian the question.
I know that. I know what he does, Meredith. You explain that.
Well, I think we can make a go of it, George. Vaudeville isn't dead.
Well, believe me, this will do it. Meredith Wilson and Straight Man.
Yeah.
Isn't that too much billing for me? How about just Meredith Wilson and Man? Or Meredith Wilson and Straight.
Well, that's okay.
Or Straight Meredith Wilson.
That's okay, George, as long as they spell Wilson with two L's. You know, lots of people think my name is spelled with one L, and they go around calling me Wilson. But it's Wilson with two L's.
And now they can call you Wilson.
Yes.
Sounds better with two L's. Look, Meredith, forget this vaudeville idea.
But gosh, George, I ought to capitalize on those stories. Can you suggest any better thing I can do with my joke book?
Meredith, believe me, no one wants to hear that Joe Miller collection of yours.
Oh, I made up some new ones myself to sort of sprinkle around among the others.
Oh, you got a few sprinklers?
Yes. For example, I say to you, say, George, do you know what the Marine said when he landed on the island of Caledonia and tried to take it from the Japs?
No, Meredith. What did the Marine say when he landed on the island of Caledonia and tried to take it from the Japs?
He said, Caledonia, Caledonia, what makes your beachhead so hard?
Meredith, you make a nice living playing music on our show. Why don't you let it go at that?
Because, George, I feel that no opportunity should be lost to bring a smile or a chuckle to this glum old world. My mother's that way. She gave the world something to laugh at.
And I had to hire it for my program.
Well, we get back to our vaudeville act.
Forget the vaudeville act. I'm not going to be your straight man.
But, gee, I am.
Come in.
Well, hi, George.
There's your man, Meredith. There he is. Bill is going to be your straight man.
Straight man for what?
My vaudeville act, Bill. Huh? I got a humdinger of an opening. We meet in the center of the stage, and I say to you, pardon me, would you give me $10 for a cup of coffee? And you say, isn't that a lot for a cup of coffee? Whereupon I reply, well, I'm a big tipper. Then I walk off the stage and leave you standing there.
You're not going to leave me standing there, not after that.
Well, I think we can work that out, but just let's run through the joke and see if you've got it. Pardon me, would you give me $10 for a cup of coffee?
I'd give you $100 for a cup of Maxwell House coffee.
Well, I'm a big tipper. Bill, I don't think it's quite as funny that way.
Well, Meredith, I can't help it. You see, that's the way I feel about Maxwell House. I'd give anything for it because Maxwell House is so appetizing, rich, full-bodied, and mellow. Coffee at its full-flavored best, always good to the last drop.
Meredith, knowing the way Bill feels about Maxwell House, I'd suggest you change cup of coffee in the joke to donut.
Okay, we'll try it that way. Pardon me, would you give me $10 for a donut?
I would if I knew a cup of Maxwell House coffee went with it. You know, more people buy and enjoy Maxwell House than any other brand of coffee in the world.
Well, I'm a big tipper.
Now, that didn't seem to help it much. I think maybe you're the best straight man, George.
Bill, if you don't stop talking about Maxwell House coffee, I'll be back in Boardville.
If I do stop, you'll be back even faster.
Look, comedian, why don't you run along and take the jerk with you?
Okay, come along, Bill.
If Meredith doesn't move out of that house next door, I'll wind up in a straitjacket of all the broken-down jokes.
Well, George, I've worked out a new schedule.
Oh, new schedule.
Yes. For the serviceman and his family. We'll put the parrot on the back porch, and you get the pantry.
How could I sleep in the pantry?
Well, you thought it was good enough for the parrot.
This may surprise you, Gracie, but men don't sleep like parrots. Have you ever heard of a man spending the night hanging on a bar?
W.C. Fields?
I'm wrong. Look, honey, I'm not just thinking of myself. The serviceman and his family would be very uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, I've got a great idea for you. If you can get Meredith Wilson to move away from next door, the serviceman and his family could have that whole house.
Oh, John, that's a wonderful idea.
Well, sure, then we can rent our den to one ex-serviceman like we planned.
Well, George, I see it all now. I'll go right over and talk to Meredith.
Well, if I do say so myself, that was a smart piece of work.
Well, George, I did it. Meredith loved the idea, and he's turning his house over to that veteran and his family.
And Meredith is moving out.
He's already moved.
Gracie, you're a genius. A great, big, gorgeous genius.
Oh, I'm not so tall.
Now, how can we turn our den over? Now we can turn our den over to some unmarried ex-serviceman.
Yeah, well, I've taken care of that, too. He's out front now. Why don't you help him carry his things in?
Okay. Can I help you?
You sure can, George. You can carry the trunk, and I'll bring my flute.
Meredith, what are you doing here?
Well, didn't Gracie tell you? I'm the ex-serviceman who's going to live here.
What?
Yep, and I know we'll get along swell. Have a million laughs.
Now, look.
Now I can tell you the snapper that story.
But, Meredith.
Speaking of Meredith.
Join us again next week when we'll all be back. George Burns, Gracie Allen, Meredith Wilson and his orchestra, and yours truly, Bill Goodwin.
Until next Thursday, then, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop.
And by the way, folks, although we had some fun today talking about the housing shortage, it really is a serious thing.
That's right. And if anyone listening has a spare room or two that might accommodate a serviceman and his family, it couldn't be put to a better use. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Stay tuned to this station because Dinah Shore's open house is coming on in just a second. Dinah's special guest tonight is Charles Lawton.
Oh, goody, goody, jello pudding tonight. It tastes like grandma's, only more so.
You ain't kidding, that's right.
And just the jello, six delicious locked-in flavors can't be beaten. So the proof of jello pudding's in the eating.
The jello twins are hard to find, but keep on looking in your store. When sugar shortages are over, there'll be more.
Just a taste of jello pudding or of jello and you know. It's the one and only J-E-L-L-O.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And the veteran? Provided housing is none other than Meredith Wilson, famed composer of The Music Man and a military man also, and also a regular voice on the Burns and Allen show back in the 40s. That episode, Taking in a Veteran, came from January 3rd, 1946, and actually it was something of a PSA, a public service announcement, regarding alleviating the housing shortage, which was a real phenomenon of post-World War II America. Next, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, as old-time radio drama continues right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join the conversation by emailing ideas at WPR.org and like us on Facebook at the Ideas Network.
Tonight, Charles Russell is Johnny Dollar. This is before Bob Bailey really took the part and made it something big. Charles Russell as Johnny Dollar is hired to check out an Arizona gold mine that's losing profits. Where are the profits going? The answer probably has to do with a mule packer, a missing fiancé, and a hard-driving local girl. Our cast includes Willard Waterman, who was later to be the great Gildersleeve, and actually by then was. And we'll hear also from John Daner, as we so often do on these nights. It's Skull Canyon Mine, yours truly, Johnny Dollar, from November 26, 1949.
I knew when I went to the desert that anyone who plays around with cactus is liable to get stuck. But I didn't remember that another way of saying death is going west.
This is another in the adventures of America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator, Johnny Dollar. At insurance investigation, Johnny Dollar is only an expert. At making out his expense account, he's an absolute genius.
Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to Old Caledonia Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Attention, Oscar M. Wheaton, Chief Investment Counsel. The following is an accounting of my expenditures during my investigation of suspected skullduggery in the Skull Canyon Mine. Or, Mr. Bones, who was that lady I seen you with last night? Or, messing with a mule train is one good way to kick off. Expense account item one. 25 cents. Tip to busboy who brought telephone to my table at the Blue Danube Restaurant, Robertson Boulevard, Los Angeles, where I happen to be working on a case. Your call came right after the liver dumpling soup, taking me out of the soup plate and putting me in the soup.
Now, this is the story, Dollar. You make notes and don't interrupt. 2 years ago, this company made an investment in a bona fide working gold mine, the Skull Canyon Mine. That's just outside Twin Buttes, Arizona.
I see.
I said, don't interrupt. That's just over the border from Nogales, Mexico. Now, up until 3 months ago, everything was fine. The profits shown by the mine were good. And then suddenly, our returns dropped 50%. However, operating expenses, man-hours, and so on remain the same, indicating there's been no fall-off in the removal of high SAR. Now, there's something wrong. We want you to go down there and find out what it is.
Expense account, item two, $12.80. I decided that since you'd invited yourself to the table, dinner at the Blue Danube was on you. Oh, in case you're interested in what you didn't have, it was that liver dumpling soup, veal paprikash, cherry strudel, and a small coffee. Enjoyed with that case I was working on. An eccentric millionaire who wanted to marry me for her money. She had yes, yes in her eyes, but when I told her I had to say goodnight immediately, she said,
oh, no.
Expense account, item three, $120, Burns Lee Flying Service. Charter plane to Twin Buttes, where I checked into the Waterfield Hotel, called the mine, and told the girl who answered that I wanted transportation out there. She said she'd come after me. Having seen too many Western movies, I figured she'd arrive in a buckboard, but instead she picked me up in a Jeep. Oh. Hey, slow down, will you? Before my teeth start falling out.
Oh, sorry. I forgot you were a tenderfoot.
That's not where I'm tender. Oh. By the way, Miss Borland, how far is it out to the mine?
23 miles.
Oh, no. Is the road like this all the way?
Oh, no. About another half mile out of town. There isn't any road at all.
Oh, if I ever live through this. From now on, I'm taking my bumps in the burlesque theater.
Oh. Much better than walking, mister. Say, you said you're out here representing the owner. What's your job?
Well, I'm an efficiency expert.
Oh.
Speaking of efficiency, what's your first name?
Jackie.
Oh, well, in that case, mine should be Gwendolyn. But it's not. It's Johnny.
Well, let's not bother shaking hands on it, pal. Here comes the end of the road.
The scenery was jumping around like a home movie. My teeth were trying to find out how much abuse my uppers would take from my lowers. I felt like I was gradually being hammered down from a tall, thin man into a short, round one. And there I was, caught without my rhinestone-studded motorcycle belt.
Well, here you are. Want me to help you out?
Oh, very funny. Get lost, you little monster. I admit I look like a bag of bones, but I'm too young to die. Come on, now, beat it.
Oh, be a good dog now. Lie down, Nugget. Down.
Yeah, Nugget, drop dead. This is mine office?
This is it.
Well, Dollar, welcome to Skull Canyon. I'm Doyle, the manager out here.
I'd be happier to meet you if I met you in town.
Mr. Dollar's in a foul mood, Jeff. That ride was a little too much for him.
That ride would have been a little bit too much for Buffalo Bill.
Well, that's how Jackie keeps that figure as trim as she does. Now, come on inside, Dollar. That's where the books are, and that's where the chairs are.
With cushions, I hope.
I'll see you guys.
All right.
Sit down.
Thanks. Oh.
Well, there you are. You'll find all the figures right in that big, fat book. All but Jackie's.
Well, I'm not in any hurry to do my arithmetic. Tell me, what do you think of the results around here? You know more about it than I do. How are things going?
Well, Dollar, I'll tell you. It was going better than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
Just a few months back, we worked out a pay vein. I'm hoping we'll pick it up again any day now.
That sounds reasonable. Any trouble? Help, equipment, working conditions?
Well, working conditions could be a lot better, but that's a geographical problem. You see, the mine is located here, and the big water supply is 8 miles west. We haul the ore across the desert by mule train to the smelter. It's cheaper than trucks. We'd have to build a road for them. Not here, hay is cheaper than gasoline. You'd like to take a look at the mine?
Frankly, Mr. Doyle, I'd just as soon climb up a chimney. I hate dark, confined spaces. But since it's part of my job, I might as well get it over with. The entrance into the mine was through an adit, a horizontal shaft into the side of a hill. We rode in on the tail end of a small red dynamite car, drawn by a donkey, junior grade, a burro. It was cooler in there, but I started to sweat the minute we left sunlight and fresh air behind us. I could hear the jackhammers nibbling little gold earbobs out of the quartz rock for the Christmas tree. Then I heard them stop, and Doyle told me why.
It sounds like they're about ready to blast.
Oh, great. Oh,
open your mouth and cover your eyes.
A 150 yards deeper into the earth, I was beginning to think that mankind is mighty hard to satisfy. The Lord gave us the world's whole surface. Then we had to go and invent gold mines and airplanes. And right then, I'd have settled for an airplane.
Oh, what's the matter, Dollar? You look a little green.
Oh, feel a little green.
Well, look, take some deep breaths and hold them as long as you can.
Okay.
Yeah, there, that'll perk you up. Well, this is it. Right here is the only face we're working.
Help. So this is it, huh? Well, let's see the rest of it.
What? I told you, this is it. This is the only face we're working.
Okay, you guys. Keep it moving. Hold that ore. Fill them up. Come on, bend your back.
Well, let's get out of here, Dollar.
Okay, Doyle. I've seen what I came to see. And I also figured I had heard what I came to hear. Dinner that night I had with Doyle and Jackie, and the steak they served gave me a rough idea of what they did with their old burros. Doyle's attitude gave me a rough idea that maybe he'd seen my eyes light up when I heard those jackhammers snorting away in some other part of the mine, just after he had told me that where we were standing was the only place being worked. After dinner, Doyle went back to the mine, leaving me alone with Jackie, which was better than dessert. By the way, Jackie, just what's your job out here?
Oh, I'm just sort of a secretary and bookkeeper and chief driver.
Uh-huh. How'd you happen to land here in Skull Canyon?
Well, I took the job because I was going to marry the man who was the manager there, Doyle's old boss. I met him in college. He was a mining engineer. His name was Larry Hodges.
Oh, what happened?
I was left at the altar. When I got out here, he was gone. Guess he got stage fright and changed his mind. Anyway, nobody's heard from him since. Least of all me. Come on, I'll show you where you sleep.
It was a real romantic night. Old Nugget the dog was carrying on a long-distance conversation with his country cousins, the coyotes up in the hills. The air was soft and warm, and so was Jackie's arm. Stars hung low. And so did my spirits when she bid me goodnight after she introduced me to my roommate.
Hiya, Sonny.
An old mule skinner named Kangaroo.
I make yourself comfortable.
Oh, by chance.
Well, better than a sand bed and a saddle pillar.
For a pine shack, this has a mighty fancy floor. What is it, mahogany?
No, tobacco juice. Helps keep out the sidewinders.
What do you mean, helps?
Little snake critters crawl in out of the hot sun to get cool. Where are you from, Sonny?
Hartford, Connecticut.
Well, I'll be turned to. I don't reckon it shows through, but I'm a Easterner myself. I'm out in New York State 53 years ago. Little town of Prattville. How deceit it was.
That's pretty dull.
What'd you say?
Oh, nothing. Say, are you the one that handles the mules on the run out to the smelter?
I'm one of them.
Well, how's chances of hitching a ride with you in the morning?
You'll have to get up early.
All right, then I'll get up early.
Well, then stop wasting your breath on a lot of dang fool words. Use some on the kerosene lamp. Quick! Right?
I lay awake, thinking about the jackhammer I'd heard working the supposedly inactive end of the Skull Canyon mine earlier that day. This didn't take too much pounding into my skull before I decided that Doyle was working on a vein for his own personal profit. I also knew that for him to convert the ore into gold, he had to get it to a smelter. So I figured that the mule skinner, Kangaroo, was the best place to start asking questions. It's funny how a sleepless night can sour the beauty of a desert sunrise.
Ahead? See the mouth of that little itty-bitty side canyon?
Yeah, I see it.
That's halfway rock. Means we're halfway to where we're going.
I'm sorry it isn't all the way rock. I wish we'd get there. The sun's getting awful hot.
Why, keep nothing, Sonny. Some days that old sun's got your tongue hanging out your fur. Gets a real nice tan.
How do you stand it? Hey. What's that stomach pump doing way out here?
Stomach pump? What in tarnation are you talking about?
That's a clever name for a light airplane. Hey, looks like he's getting ready to give us a buzz.
Hey, Jules! Hey, you, Monroe! The steady blast! Monroe! Doggone it, he's the loudest mouth-gaping old you ever did hear.
Hey, here he comes.
Oh, hold it, move.
First thing I learned was, if you ever want to panic a team of mules, just buzz them with an airplane. The second thing I learned was that little canyon we were approaching was loaded with armed horsemen who came galloping out like they were trying to make history at Chan Foran. The gunman didn't do anything to me except hold me at bay while the plane picked itself a landing and disgorged its one-man air force.
Buenos dias, amigos. Why, you all look happy to see me. Maybe my friend scares you with their guns, eh? Hey, old man. Who is this new boy who died with you today?
Hey, his name's Dolly.
Right now, I wish it was Hopalong Chastity.
Well, let me introduce myself. They call me El Puerco. That's because I look like a fish. But maybe it is because I'm so greedy, too. I want what you got with you.
Why, Dalton, your miserable son beats high.
Now, take it easy, old timer. It's okay. All I've got on me is a wristwatch and a few bucks. Let them have them. And besides, what's he going to do with a wagon load of unrefined gold ore?
You talk like a little boy. I know what you have with you, and I know where it is. It's under the seat, a little white bag. $30,000 of pure gold.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of Johnny Dollar. But first, hardly a clue to start on, and the witnesses' stories at hopeless variance. That was the job that the Birmingham, Alabama police faced in the murder called the Case of the Hue and Cry. Later tonight on Gangbusters, Birmingham's own police chief comes to CBS to tell you how they tracked down the apparently unmotivated murder. Be sure to hear this true-to-life police story, reenacted on Gangbusters. Gangbusters and the Adventures of Philip Marlowe are regular Saturday night features on most of these same CBS stations. Now, with our star, Charles Russell, we return to the second act of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar.
So there I was, Johnny Dollar, efficiency expert. I had efficiently gotten myself in trouble, was efficiently letting El Puerco walk off with a large pot of your gold, and stood a good chance of efficiently getting myself shot in the belly.
There we are, amigo. I feel better now the gold is in my little aeroplane. I hope you're not mad with me. You know, I need the money to pay my taxes.
Okay, you got what you wanted. Why don't you take off and get out of here?
That ding-dang rascal, he's probably figuring on shooting me.
Oh, no, old man. I'm a very scientific bandido. You think I want to shoot you and get killed myself for murder? Oh, no. I let you and mules do the dirty work.
Hey, Manuel, Pedro, Juanito, here, adelante.
Take this man and tie them to the stage back to back. And the rest of you tie up the mules in a circle around in nice close. Then I will get in my little aeroplane and dive on the mules. And the mules will kick their heads off.
Pitching horseshoes may be fun, but not when they're being pitched at your head by a mule. Once we were tied back-to-back on a stake, the nearest available technical advisor, Kangaroo, was anything but encouraging.
That's the trouble with a gold-earned mule. When they get riled up, they think with their feet. Here he comes.
Oh, there. I guess we showed him.
Yeah.
I ain't stunned mules 40 years for nothing. I can handle them.
Oh, nice going, Kangaroo.
Now, listen, Sonny, I got me an idea.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, go something like this. Hey! Oh!
Just as the idea, whatever it was, hit Kangaroo, a hoof from one of the mules scored a ringer around my cranium. Ah, the stars looked beautiful. They came out in the shape of a horseshoe. And as I slipped into that familiar Betty Bye for private eyes, the world of hit-on-the-head darkness, I could hear Kangaroo's advice, too little and too late.
You see, you can never trust a mule. Never trust a mule. Never trust a mule. Never trust a mule.
A long time later, the curtains of my eyelids went up on the next act. But something was wrong. The stage was still dark. The stars were still there, but not in the horseshoe planet. I closed my eyes and dreamed some more. I was lying near an oasis in the Sahara Desert, and a beautiful maiden bending over me, kissing me. She was breathing hard. She could have used some sense then.
Huh?
Nugget, get away from me, you mangy cur.
Nugget, get away from me. Oh, Johnny, thank you.
What? Jackie. Oh, what are you doing out here?
Well, take it easy, pal. It's a darn good thing I am out here. You getting yourself kicked in the head.
Let's just say the wrong end of a horse got mixed up with the wrong end of a mule. Hey, where's Kangaroo? Where are the mules? What's going on?
Johnny, relax. Kangaroo and the mules are on their way back to the mine.
Oh, where's Pancho Tortilla?
Who?
There was a Mexican bandit out here. The greatest piece of typecasting since the Gutenberg Bible.
Oh, El Puerco.
Yeah,
Kangaroo told me about him. Come on now. Try to get up. Come on.
Oh.
Hey,
what happened to you? Your clothes are all torn.
Yeah. This is Mr. Doyle's idea of a proposal of marriage. We're supposed to fly off together to South America tonight. Been planning it for a long time.
Well, what made you change your mind?
Oh, you know how it is. Best laid plans with mice and men.
Oh, yeah. You're talking to an expert. If everything went all right for me, where would I be next week? Same time, same station. But what's your angle?
I told you before. I came out to Skull Canyon to marry a man. I've reason to believe that Doyle did away with him to get his job so he could milk the mine. Well, I stayed on and acted just interested enough in Doyle to get him nice and relaxed. Hoping he'd spill something. Well, so far all it's been is bragging up life in South America with him.
Wow.
Now, I hope you can help me. And I know I can help you.
How?
Well, Doyle set up a refining layout right in the mine. When the gold he's been stealing comes out, it's pure gold.
Uh-huh. Then somebody in the mine must have tipped off El Puerco.
Mm-hmm, Doyle did.
Oh.
He and El Puerco are working together. El Puerco's job was to get the gold across the border and you out of the way.
I see. Well, listen, you ever been in the mine? I mean, could you show me the way the refining layout?
Oh, no. Doyle's never let me inside.
Well, how about the charts of the mine?
They're in the safe. I've got the combination. If we can just get in without Doyle seeing me, I can get them.
Now, leave that to me. Come on, let's get going. Wait a minute. How do we get back?
Well, I came out in the Jeep.
Oh, my aching head. This is close enough, Star Eyes. We better pull up right here.
All right. Nothing, quiet.
Say, the wedding may be off, but it sounds like the reception is still on.
No, that's the regular Saturday night square dance.
Oh. Well, look, from here, which way is the office? I'm lost.
Right over here.
Oh.
Come on, I'll show you. We're in it, yes, sir.
When we round the corner of the office building, my heart was doing a do-si-do. The door of the safe was open, and so was the mouth of the fellow in front of us. But he wasn't saying anything. He was lying on the floor, dead. El Puerco, the pig. Oh, what a spot for a big red apple.
Johnny, dead. He must come back for something. Kangaroo must have caught up with him.
Oh, whoever caught up with him, but good. Come on, let's go take a look for Kangaroo.
careful, darling. Saul may be in there.
Boy, tight spots really give that word darling a good workout, don't they? Okay, darling. Wait out here. I'll be careful. Say, partner, you see Kangaroo around here?
Kangaroo?
Yeah.
Well, sure. Kangaroo came in here looking for Doyle.
Well, did he find him?
Well, don't know. Doyle went over to the mine.
Is that where Kangaroo went?
Well, if I was looking for Doyle, that's where I'd go.
Thank you, bottleneck. I don't know why I was in such a hurry heading straight into trouble. But the trouble started popping before we got to it.
Oh, poor Kangaroo.
Jackie was only guessing, but I could only hope she wasn't guessing right.
Jonathan.
Hmm?
Johnny, I thought I saw something flashing just inside.
Probably somebody's last spark of life. Now, take it easy. You stay right here. I'll move in from the side of the entrance.
No, I don't... All right. Be careful.
He sure got you good, partner.
Okay, Jackie, you can relax. The right man got it, your playman, Mr. Doyle.
Oh, Johnny, it's awful. What a relief.
Hey, Kangaroo, you can come on now. Everything's all right. It's us, Jackie and Dollar.
Anyway, don't make a move. You stop.
Hey, what the...
Harry!
Hey, wait up.
Larry, you mean the guy you thought was dead? The guy you were supposed to marry?
Yes. Oh, Larry. Larry, darling.
I'll kill you.
No. Oh, Larry. Larry, what happened to you?
I was killed.
It wasn't worth waiting for anyway. Oh, well, Kangaroo, I'm glad your first interest was feeding your mules so that you didn't get mixed up in all that shooting.
Yep. Poor. Well, I'll tell you, when three bad eggs like Hodges and Doyle and El Puerco get together double-crossing each other, they all gotta wind up in the omelet. Again. Sure feels good to get your boots off. That Larry feller thought he was pretty smart, holding up in that mine with his own private smelter, using Doyle for a front. The only thing was, he didn't figure on Doyle falling in love with his woman.
Yeah, who wouldn't?
Hey, for a young fella, you sure talk a lot. How about using some of that breath you're wasting on that kerosene lamp, huh? Quick. Right.
Expense account, item 4, $6.10. One quart snake bite medicine. 32 ounces of prevention in the case a snake should bite me. Item 5, $3.40, with which I purchased the nicest gift I could think of for a gal in Jackie Moreland's position. A telegram to you, requesting that you give her a job she very much deserved, the managership of the Skull Canyon Mine. You see, when she first found out that man she was going to marry didn't love her, she took out her affection on the territory, which makes me very sorry that I wasn't born in the state of Arizona. Expense account item 6, $164.35. Transportation, Twin Buttes to Hartford. Expense account total, $947.99, which makes just about as much sense as you can make without making it a dollar. Signed, yours, no charge for that double talk. Truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, is produced and directed by Gordon T. Hughes and stars Charles Russell. script by Paul Dudley and Gil Dowd. Featured in the cast were Doris Singleton, John Daner, Willard Waterman, Fred Howard, and Don Diamond. The special music is written and conducted by Leith Stevens. Your announcer is Paul Masterson. Be sure to be with us at the same time next week when another unusual expense account is handed in by
yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Music Popular and Music Western are on the bill for CBS listeners again tonight. Vaughn Monroe and his band will present the five top tunes of the week, plus Army and Navy marching songs, Anchors Away, On Brave Old Army Theme, and many others. Gene Autry follows right on the heels of Vaughn's caravan with favorites straight from the land of sagebrush and six guns. For an hour of wonderful music, hear Vaughn Monroe's caravan and the Gene Autry Show tonight and every Saturday on most of these same CBS stations. Stay tuned now for Vaughn Monroe's caravan, which follows immediately on most of these stations. This is CBS, where yours truly, Johnny Dollar, meets adventure every Saturday night, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Charles Russell is yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the intrepid insurance investigator, going to the Skull Canyon Mine to investigate some skullduggery on behalf of the insurance industry in a broadcast from November 26, 1949. Stay right there for science fiction from X-1 as old-time radio drama continues right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Wait, wait, don't tell me. Central Time. These programs and many more are possible thanks to listener support. You can learn about WPR programs, schedules, and so much more at WPR.org. Thank you. Support also comes from I'm Bored Games and Family Fun, offering a full selection of role-playing games, puzzles, collectibles, and more, located in Middleton and now Sun Prairie. Details are at imboardgamestore.com.
Tonight's episode of X-1 is called Time and Time Again, and it takes us to that futuristic year of 1975 and the Battle of Buffalo. And then we go back 30 years to an earlier part of our hero's life. And we'll find out how things can change and perhaps how they cannot in Time and Time Again. X-1 from January 11th, 1956.
In just a moment, X-1. But first, when you hear the hearty laugh and familiar voice of the great Gildersleeve tomorrow night, you know you're in for some hilarious adventures. Because whenever Gildy is around, somehow things never seem to go as planned. It might be his impulsive nature, or maybe it's his incurable weakness for the fairest sex, but whatever it is, the great Gildersleeve is bound to keep you laughing for a full 25 minutes. Tune in tomorrow night and meet Judge Hooker, Nephew Leroy, Housekeeper Bertie, and all the rest of the friendly people from Summerfield as they join the great Gildersleeve. Now stay tuned for X-1 on NBC.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Time and Time Again by H. Beam Piper. It happened during a routine skirmish in the Great War. Patrols advanced from the defense perimeter under jet cover and preceded by napalm throwers. The enemy defended in depth and mopped up with guided 98s fired from 40 miles to the rear. The blast area was 10 miles in circumference, and the medics didn't find much to pick up over 500 yards in.
Come on. All right, I'll back it in here. Look out, it's lousy with mud. More. Now, cut left. More, hold it. Stretches.
Come on, Travers, get those men out.
Yes, sir. Get a move on. Line them up. Come on. Easy. You want to kill them?
Okay, take it away.
I might have left those Joes where they was. Half of them won't last till the plane comes.
As long as they're alive, they'll be treated. Get those tags out, Travers. Start taking names.
Yes, sir. This one must have been 1,000 yards in.
Get his dog tag out.
What a mess. Here. Hartley Allen, Captain G5 Camry, search AN-73D. Number SO-23869-403-J.
Hartley?
Allen Hartley.
Oh. That must be the Hartley that wrote Children of the Mist and Conker's Road.
Never heard of him. Major, I think maybe he's partly conscious. Had I better give him another shot?
Go ahead, Sergeant. There isn't much else we can do for him. It's a rotten shame.
Yeah, ain't it always? Okay, Captain, let me have that arm. There.
Oh. Alan!
Oh, God. It's Alan.
Get up, Alan. Can't stay in bed all day.
I remember that. Clear as if it were real.
Up and at him. Hit the deck.
Remarkably vivid. It's strange.
Alan, are you all right?
I'm all right. What's wrong with my voice? It's too high.
Well, what are you doing? Practicing singing?
My voice has changed.
Is that all? You're growing up. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Hey, wake up, son. Wake up.
I am awake. It's impossible. I am awake.
Well, the way you slept through that alarm, I'd say it was impossible. Come on, out of bed.
I don't understand.
You went to bed at a decent hour. You could wake up the next morning. Come on, son. Breakfast waiting. Out of bed or I'll turn it over.
All right. It's a dream.
Maybe. But you're wide awake now.
I am. I'm awake.
Well, half awake anyway.
That's the bell at St. Boniface, isn't it? What day is it?
Are you kidding? You forget today's your birthday?
No, I didn't forget.
Neither did I. Here, son. Happy 13th birthday. You won't guess what's in here.
A rifle. A light 22 rifle.
Oh, now how did you know that?
I remembered.
Did I spill the beans sometime? Oh. I could have sworn it would be a surprise. Well, go on. Open it. You like it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's perfect, Dad.
We'll have to lay down rules about using it. And I'll have to teach you how to operate it. I don't believe in letting a boy handle a gun till he really knows how. If I let you play with that thing before I teach you about guns, you'd blow your head off.
I suppose, sir.
I'll be shaving, Alan. Come down to breakfast when you're ready. Well, it's a big day today. You're almost a man.
Almost.
Hey, you're still groggy. Snap out of it, Alan.
I will. There's a dream in it somewhere, but I'm not sure which.
What?
Never mind, Dad. I'll be right down for breakfast.
What are you going to do today, son?
I want to do some reading this morning.
That's always a good thing to do. After breakfast, suppose you take a walk down to the station and get me a Times.
Didn't it come?
What, the Times? Well, they don't deliver. Be a good idea, though. Maybe I'll talk to Sam Ashburn about it. Here's a half dollar, Alan. Get anything you want for yourself out of the change.
Thanks, Dad.
Finish your milk before you go.
Sure, Dad. Thanks for the money.
You're big enough to handle it now. Hurry back. I'd like to finish the crossword puzzle before lunch.
Here you are, Alan. One times. Tell your father the puzzle's a stinker this week.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Ashburn.
Look out for the trucks when you cross the highway.
I'll go across Elton's lot. It's a shortcut.
Elton's? You'll have a hard time crossing there, son. There's four buildings on that block.
I thought they burned down.
I've seen them this morning, big as life.
I guess that didn't happen yet.
What'd you say?
Nothing, Mr. Ashburn. I was just muttering.
My days, youngsters talked up.
Yes, sir. Bye, Mr. Ashburn. Monday, August 6th, 1945. Okinawa 1, bombing Japan.
Hey, Alan. Huh? Alan, wait up.
Hey, Larry Morton. Hiya, Larry.
Hi, Al. You going to Sunday school?
No, I have some things I want to do at home.
Oh, get him. Fancy pants talk. Things I want to do at home.
Oh, go chase yourself around the block.
Go jump in a garbage can.
Go take a flying jet to the moon.
Hey, that's a new one. Flying jet to the moon. You thought up a new one, Al.
Yeah.
I wish I could stay home from Sunday school when I wanted to. How about us going swimming at the canoe club after?
Oh, I wish I could. I gotta stay home. We're expecting company. A couple of aunts of mine. Dad wants me to stay home when they come.
Aunts are a pain.
Nothing I can do.
You see the football movie at the Grand? Boy, what a team. Notre Dame.
I thought you'd like Cornell.
Cornell? They couldn't beat Vassar.
Well, you're gonna go to Cornell, aren't you?
Me, Cornell? Fat chance.
I'll bet you do.
I wouldn't take your money.
Well, I know you wouldn't, but you'll go to Cornell, all right.
Ha, Cornell. Far above Cayuga's waters, there's an awful smell.
Just the same, you'll go to Cornell. Hey, Larry, I gotta go.
Well, so long, Al. I'll see you.
So long, Larry. See you.
I'm stuck in this corner. Seven-letter word, a mixing proportion.
Titrate.
Huh? Titrate. T-I. It fits. Now, how did you know that, Alan?
That? Well, I read it somewhere, I guess.
Oh. What's reading now? Tarzan again?
No, not Tarzan.
It's refreshing to see you with a book. Sometimes I think I ought to forbid comic books in the house. Yeah, they must be raising the devil with those bombing raids in Japan.
How long do you think the war in Japan will last, Dad?
Oh? I'd say to the middle of 1946. They'll have to invade those islands foot by foot.
I don't think so, Dad. I wouldn't be surprised if the war was over very suddenly.
How? By magic? There isn't a thing on earth will make those Japanese surrender. You expect somebody to make a pass and it'll be all over by this afternoon?
Something like that.
I wish it could. A lot of boys dead in the invasion of Japan.
Mr. Hartley, excuse me, please.
Oh, hello, Mr. Gutchell.
That's Frank Gutchell, Dad?
That's right.
Excuse me. I didn't mean to disturb you, Mr. Hartley.
It's all right. Lovely day, isn't it, Mr. Gutchell?
Mr. Hartley, the Lord's Day is always beautiful.
Of course, Mr. Gutchell.
Mr. Hartley, I wonder if you could lend me a gun and some bullets. My little dog's been hurt, and it's been suffering something terrible.
Oh, that's too bad.
I want a gun to put the poor thing out of its pain.
Of course. How would a 20-gauge shotgun do? You wouldn't want anything heavy.
I was hoping you'd let me have a little gun. Maybe, so big.
Pistol?
So I could put it in my pocket. It wouldn't look right to carry a hunting gun on the Lord's Day, and people wouldn't understand that it was for a work of mercy.
Of course, I understand. You're a very religious man.
The whole world is evil, Mr. Hartley.
Yeah, sometimes it certainly looks like it. Well, I have a Colt 38 special from the auxiliary police outfit.
Well, that's fine.
Now, you've got to bring it right back, Mr. Gutchell. I might be called out. Now, you'll have to promise to get it right back.
Dad, wait a minute. I just remembered.
Remembered what?
Well, aren't there some cartridges left for the Luger? Then you wouldn't be without the Colt.
That's right. I have got a German automatic I could let you have. That way I wouldn't get stuck. You'd have to return it promptly, though.
Oh, wait, Dad. I'll get it. I know where the cartridge is.
Be careful, son. Well, Mr. Gutchel, it sure turned out nice.
Hello, police headquarters. This is Blake Hartley. Frank Gutchel, who lives on Campbell Street, has just borrowed a gun from me, ostensibly to shoot a dog. What? No, he has no dog. He intends shooting his wife. Now listen, he'll walk home. If you hurry, you can get a man there on time. What? No, but I wish you'd get my pistol back to me. It's from the First World War. All right, then you'll take care of it. Goodbye.
There you are. What kept you, Alan?
Well, I couldn't find the cartridges at first. I'll show Mr. Gutchel how it works. It's all loaded, ready to shoot. This is the safety. Just push it forward and up. There are 8 shots in it.
Did you load the chamber, Alan?
Sure. It's on safe now. You understand how it works, Mr. Gutchel?
Oh, yes. Yes, I understand. Thank you, Mr. Hartley. Thank you, Sonny. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mr. Gutchel. Return the gun when you're done.
Yes, I'll be done with it soon. Goodbye.
Alan. You shouldn't have loaded that gun.
I guess it's all over now. I had to keep you from fooling with it. I didn't want you to see I took out the firing pin.
You what?
Gutchel didn't want that gun to shoot a dog. He's a fanatic. He sees visions, hears voices. The voices probably put him up to this. Well, I'll submit that any man who holds intimate conversations with disembodied spirits isn't to be trusted with a gun.
What are you talking about?
While I was at it, I called the police upstairs. I put a handkerchief over my mouth and told them I was you.
You? Well, why did you have to do that?
I couldn't have told them this is little Alan Hartley, 13 years old.
And suppose he really wants to shoot a dog. What kind of a mess will I be in then?
No mess. If I'm wrong, which I'm not, I'll take the rap for it. Dumb kid trick, you know. But if I'm right, you'll have to front for me. You give me a lot of cheap boy hero publicity, which I don't want.
This is crazy, Alan. This is absolutely crazy.
Maybe. We'll have the complete returns in 20 minutes.
Mr. Hartley?
Mr. Blake Hartley?
That's right.
I'm Detective Sergeant Kaborski from Homicide. Here's your Luger.
Thank you.
I don't know how you spotted that guy, but when we busted in, he was pointing that gun at his wife and swearing a blue streak because it wouldn't go off.
I'm glad I was able to help.
You know, they may even have some kind of a citation for you, Mr. Hartley.
I don't think that's necessary.
In the department, we figure a little publicity never hurt nobody. Even a lawyer, huh?
I really would prefer it if it were kept quiet.
Well, whatever you say. We'll want you to drop around in the morning for a statement.
I'll be glad to.
Well, goodbye. Goodbye, Sonny.
Goodbye, Sergeant.
Sergeant. Why don't you take the citation, Dad?
Well, you were right. You saved that woman's life. Now, let's see you put back the firing pin.
Sure. There.
All right, Alan. Suppose we have a little talk.
But I explained everything.
You did not. Yesterday, you wouldn't even have known how to take this pistol apart. Today, you've been using language and expressing ideas that are outside of everything you've ever known before. Now, I want to know...
I hope you're not toying with the medieval notion of obsession.
What?
Well, you say I'm changed. When did you first notice this?
Well, last night, you were still my little boy. This morning, I don't know. You've been strange all day. There's been something... Alan, what's happened to you?
I wish I could be sure myself, Dad. You see, when I woke this morning, I hadn't the least recollection of anything I'd done yesterday, August 4th, 1945.
Oh, but that's serious.
You don't know how serious. My last memory was lying on a stretcher, injured by a bomb explosion. I was 43 years old, and the year was 1975.
1975? Well, that's right. You'll be 43 in 1975, but a bomb?
Yes, during the siege of Buffalo in the Third World War. I was a captain in G5, Scientific Warfare, General Staff.
Buffalo? You mean Buffalo, New York?
There'd been a transpolar invasion of Canada. I was sent to the front to check on service failures of a new lubricating oil. A week after I got there, Ottawa fell and the retreat started. We made a stand at Buffalo, and that was where I got it. I remember being picked up and getting a narcotic injection. The next thing I knew, I was in bed upstairs, and it was 1945 again. And I was back in my own 13-year-old body.
Oh, Alan, you just had a nightmare to end all nightmares, that's all.
I thought it might be that at first, but I rejected it. It won't fit the facts.
But it's ridiculous, all this Battle of Buffalo stuff. You picked up something listening to the radio. All the commentators have been going on about another war after this one. You've just got an undigested hunk of H.V. Kaldin born in your subconscious, that's
all. But that isn't everything. I remember 4 years of high school, 4 years at Cornell, 7 years as a reporter on the Philadelphia Record, 3 novels, Children of the Mist, Rose of Death, Conqueror's Road. You think a 13-year-old can dream up all that stuff?
But it's the only possible explanation.
Maybe, but I can speak 5 languages today that I couldn't yesterday. French, German, Chinese, Russian, and a little Spanish. Although I've got a Mexican accent you could cut with a knife.
But how did it happen? Alan, I can't believe it.
All I know is here I am. I've been reading up on time theories. Nobody seems to know much about them. Evidently, time exists parallel as another dimension, and I got kicked backwards along it.
But how?
Oh, it may have been the radiations from the bomb or the narcotic injection, or both together. But the fact remains, I'm here with full knowledge of my future identity.
This is quite a shock, Alan.
But you do believe me, don't you?
Yes, I suppose I must. You seem so strange, as if you weren't my son.
I'm your son, all right. Same body as yesterday. I've just had an educational shortcut.
Wait a minute. If you can remember the next 30 years... Suppose you tell me when the war is going to end. This one against the Japs, I mean.
Oh, sure. Well, the Japanese surrender will be announced at exactly 7.01 p.m. on August 14th. That's a week from Tuesday.
A week from Tuesday.
You better make sure we have plenty of grub in the house by then. Everything will be closed up tight till Thursday morning, even the restaurants. I remember we had nothing to eat in the house but some scraps.
A week from Tuesday. And that's pretty sudden, isn't it?
Not after today.
What do you mean? What happened today?
Oh, plenty. What time is it, Dad?
That's 11:16.
Is your watch right?
Well, to the seconds, why?
Well, it'll come at exactly 11:17:40.
What'll come?
The radio announcement.
What are you getting at? Something important on the radio? Well, we'll see.
Well, don't bother, Dad. It won't work. I remember we had a tube burned out.
There is something wrong. When is this announcement of yours?
Now I remember it. I memorized it in journalism school in 1954. What time is it?
11:18 o'clock.
We're breaking into the program now. President Truman has just announced that an atomic bomb has been dropped on the Japanese industrial city of Hiroshima. The bomb was dropped 16 hours ago, and the announcement was delayed to ascertain the results of the explosion. A man named John Howard Peterson read that announcement from the Washington newsroom of NBC.
I don't believe it.
No? Well, listen. That's the Burke Platt factory whistle. And the bells of St. Boniface. Now, next, the whistle at the volunteer firehouse.
Well, then it's true. It's true.
Sure. Then Larry Morton came by on his bicycle.
Hey, Al. Al, you here? You hear about the bomb? An atomic bomb?
Yeah, we heard.
Boy, atomic bomb. Oh, boy. I gotta go find my pop. He's on the golf course. Bye, Al. Bye, Mr. Hartley.
You knew. You knew about it.
The next bomb hits Nagasaki.
I thought that stuff about atomic energy was so much fantasy. Was that the kind of bomb that got you?
Oh, that was a firecracker to the one that got me. It was a guided 98, exploded 10 miles away.
And that's going to happen in 30 years?
I remember it.
How about... how about me? Oh, wait. Never mind. I don't think I'd better know when I'm going to die.
I couldn't tell you anyway. I had a letter from you just before I left for the front. You were 78 then, and you were still hunting and fishing and flying your own plane.
But another war, and fought on American soil. Oh, Alan, I wish this hadn't happened to you.
It happened. I remember it. But if I can help it, I'm not going to get killed in any Battle of Buffalo.
But if you remember it, if time exists as a parallel dimension... Then every tick, we're getting closer to that Third World War.
Dad, you know what I remembered when Gutchill came to borrow that gun?
No, I suppose that you suspected him and warned me.
No, that wasn't it. The other time, the first time, when I was really 13, I wasn't home. I'd been swimming at the canoe club with Larry Morton. When I get home about a half an hour from now, I found the house full of cops.
But if the gun didn't fire...
What makes you think it didn't? Gutchell talked the 38 out of you. He went home, shot his wife four times in the body, once behind the ear, and used the sixth shot to blow his own brains out.
That's what you remember?
Yes. The cops traced the gun. They took a very poor view of your lending it to him. You never got it back.
But here it is.
Oh, not the way I remember it. But I didn't want you in trouble, so I warned you. Dad, I found out the future can be changed.
One man can't change the whole future.
I stopped a murder and a suicide.
I know, but...
With 30 years to work, I can stop a world war. I'll have the means, too.
The means?
Unlimited wealth and influence. I've got a good memory, Dad. I wrote a list out this afternoon.
Salt, jet pilot, citation, ponder, middle ground. What is this, a code?
Horses. That's a list of Kentucky Derby winners from 1946 to 1970.
Huh? You sure?
Oh, I learned that list on a bet at the Officers Club in Cincinnati in 1971. Assault paid 8-1. You figure out what we can take in.
But gambling.
Oh, this isn't gambling. It's a sure thing. When we get rolling, we'll make the Rockefellers look like pikers.
Assault at 8-1.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose I could scrape up $5,000. In 10 years, that'll make a lot of money. Any other little thing you have in mind, Ellen?
Well, by 1952, we start building a political organization here in Pennsylvania. In 1960, I think we can elect you president.
President? Isn't that going a little too far?
Well, why not? Who wouldn't vote for a politician who was always right? Besides, that's the one thing we've got to change. In 1960, we had a man in the White House who was good to his wife and sang a nice tenor, and that's about all. He fouled up so completely, we ended up at war. Now, I think President Hartley might be a little more trusted to take a strong line.
But I don't know anything about international decisions.
I do. I know all the wrong ones. If we can stop one murder, we can stop a war. It's worth a try, isn't it?
I guess so. How do I start?
Well, as I remember, just after the bomb announcement, you got a phone call from the City Fusion Party about the next election.
Well, there's a lot of talk about a reform ticket.
Well, that call is going to be important, Dad. It's the turning point. Now, you've got to know. There it is.
Well, what do I do?
Well, answer it. Go ahead.
But...
Don't worry. I'll tell you what to do. Go ahead.
Hello? Yes, this is Blake Hartley. Judge Cribbins. Yes. Just a moment. Alan.
Oh.
He's asking me to run.
Oh, my head.
Alan.
Oh.
Alan, what's the matter?
Oh.
Alan. He passed out. Alan, what do I do now? Alan, listen to me. Alan. Alan, what's the matter?
Captain. Captain Hartley. Captain Hartley.
He was all right, Doctor. I gave him the shot and he was all right.
Well, he's dead. All right, Sergeant. Make out the tag. Hartley Allen. Captain. Dead April 8th, 1975.
Alan, what happened? Alan! Alan! Alan, are you all right?
Hi, Dad.
I've got Judge Crimmins on the phone. What do I tell him?
What?
Alan, are you all right? You passed out.
Sure. I'm all right. Hey, today's my birthday, isn't it? What'd you get for my birthday, huh?
Don't you remember? The Third World War?
What Third World War? Dad, what's the matter? You're looking at me funny.
You don't remember. You're back again, aren't you? Back to 13 years old.
Sure, I'm 13 today, for corn's sake, Dad.
You must have died up there. It was only a mind transfer. That means I'm on my own. I have to do it myself without your help.
Help for what? If it's the grass, I said I'd cut it tomorrow.
No, it's not the grass. I've got to save your life, Ellen. I can't let you die that way in 1975.
What are you talking about, Dad? You sound goofy.
I've got to change it all by myself.
Change what?
Never mind, Alan. You don't know yet. Come on. Let's have lunch.
Sure, Dad, but how about my present now? What'd you give me for my birthday?
In a minute, son. Go on in.
Okay. Well, hurry up, Dad. Huh?
Sure, all right. Now, where did I put that list of horses?
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of astounding science fiction. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you Time and Time Again, written by H. Beam Piper and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in the cast were Jack Grimes, Peter Fernandez, Joe DeSantis, Joseph Bell, Clark Gordon, Herm Dinkin, Dick Hamilton, and James Dukas. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Knowledge of the future provided 30 years into the past. And yet, time remains the same, in a way, in Time and Time Again. X-1 from January 11th, 1956. Get ready to launch a mini-series in the form of Adventures by Morse. About that next. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Join the conversation by emailing ideas at WPR.org and like us on Facebook at the Ideas Network.
This is a 10-parter. 10 parts of Adventures by Morse called City of the Dead, which had its debut back in January of 1944. Tonight's episode, our first one, comes from January 8th of 44, and it takes us to a moonlit night in October and a young couple ejected from their car. A young couple that soon finds themselves in the city of the dead. An interrogator who sounds a lot like Peavy, in fact is, I'm sure, from The Great Gildersleeve, and it's a strange casting choice, but get used to it. We're long on atmosphere and, well, very twisted of plot. And you'll be introduced to Captain Friday, who's going to sort through it all in these 10 episodes of The City of the Dead from Adventures by Morse. Episode 1.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The City of the Dead, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
But first, listen to a word from our sponsor. The City of the Dead. There are 10,000 citizens in the City of the Dead, each with a white marble slab indicating each residence. The gates of the City of the Dead have long been closed to newcomers. It is a city whose population has remained unchanged for the last 10 years. And the mayor of this city is Joshua Friday. Some call him caretaker of the old cemetery in the valley. But anyone who knows Joshua Friday at all calls him mayor. He is the only living person in the City of the Dead. That is, unless you care to include Lammy Fink, a slow-witted fellow who does kitchen police duty and a little gardening in the city during the day and retires beyond its precincts at night. The City of the Dead lies in a tiny valley 25 miles from the suburb of a great city. It is off the main highway and completely isolated from the world. But now it's 9 o'clock on a moonlit, windy night in October.
Come on. Come on, get out of that car. You heard me.
What do you want?
You want me to plug you?
Oh, Jimmy, do what he says.
You too, girl. Get out.
You let go of me.
You let that girl alone.
And get out of the car. Both of you. Yeah. Now start walking. No. The other way.
But that's toward the graveyard.
You heard me. And don't look back or they'll pick up your bodies in the morgue wagon in the morning. Now get moving.
Jimmy, what's happening to us?
Keep walking. Don't look around.
They've stolen your machine.
I know it, Phyllis. I couldn't tackle two armed men.
Well, of course you couldn't.
I should in the park way out here in the country.
But it was nice. It was so still in the moonlight. Who do you suppose they were?
Probably car thieves. They didn't touch us.
Jimmy. Listen.
Church bell.
Well, there aren't any churches around here.
Oh, sure there is. That little old church down at the other end of the valley.
Well, but that's all falling to pieces. It hasn't been used for years.
That's right. Funny, isn't it?
Jimmy, I'm scared. Do we have to go on?
Well, look, Phyllis, there's a light ahead of us. You know what it is?
No. Oh, Jimmy, what's that?
Quick, get off the road, behind those bushes. Get down.
Oh, Jimmy. Jimmy, what was that? What was...
Shh.
Oh, I wish we were home.
Don't talk so loud, Phyllis. That fellow acted as though he were being chased.
Chased?
Listen. Don't hear anything, do you?
No.
Then come on. Keep on the grass. Well,
where are we going?
You saw that light. I just remembered that the caretaker of the City of the Dead lives around here somewhere. That must be his place.
Oh, I don't like that name.
What? City of the Dead?
Yes. Graveyard's bad enough.
Well, anyway, we'll get him to let us use his phone, call the police and have a car sent out for us. Well, there, you can see the outline of the house among the trees. See it?
Uh-huh. Looks awfully lonesome, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Look, what are those?
We're inside the City of the Dead. Those are the tombstones glistening in the moonlight.
I don't like it, Jimmy.
Oh, here's the door.
Oh, Jimmy, don't leave me.
I'm right here in the shadow.
He doesn't answer.
It's funny. What do you want?
Oh, no.
Hey, where did you come from?
What do you want?
Are you the caretaker?
Supposing I am.
Oh, what made you sneak up on us from behind?
That you making that crazy noise.
What noise? Oh, you mean the man crying?
Oh, so twas you.
Oh, no. No, it wasn't. He passed us down the road. He was scared.
What are you doing here?
Why, our car was stolen from us.
Oh, stolen? Hi, Doc. Open the door.
Yes. Two men held us up. We want to phone to the city for help.
Were you here, Doc?
They're coming, Mayor. Oh, here you are. Well, what have you there, Mayor?
Go on in, you two.
Yes, sir.
Lock up again, will you, Doc?
Sure. Were they the ones picking up the rumpus?
They tell a queer story. Here, you two, sit down. Said the car was stolen, Doc. Who stole it?
I don't know, just two gunmen.
Yeah.
Here, Mayor, you better let me do the questioning. We'll get further.
Go ahead.
What's your name, son?
James Parker, sir, and this is Miss Phyllis Carroll.
How do you do, Miss Carroll? Now, Mr. Parker, as I understand, you and Miss Carroll were out riding this evening.
Uh-huh. We were parked down the road near your house.
Parked? What for?
No, Mayor.
Well, it looks suspicious to me, Doc, with all these other goings on.
No, you just don't understand modern young folk, Mayor. You'd better let me do the talking. Now then, you were parked on the edge of the road, I take it?
Yes, sir.
And then what happened?
Well, two men suddenly appeared, one on each side of the car, and told us to put up our hands and get out of the car.
They were armed, you say?
Yeah, both of them. When we got out, they told us to keep walking in the direction of the graveyard.
What's that?
Oh, son, don't ever say that word again in front of Mayor Friday. This is the City of the Dead.
Oh, yes, sir. Sorry.
Yeah. Now, go on.
Well, just as we saw the light in the caretaker's...
It's Mayor, son. Mayor.
Yes, sir. Just as we saw the light in the mayor's house, we heard someone coming down the road as hard as he could run. He was scared.
Hysterical, huh?
Yes, sir, he was. Crying and sobbing.
Oh, Jimmy, you forgot about the bell.
Bell?
Yes, the church bell. It seemed to come from down at the other end of the City of the Dead.
I guess it was from the old church down there.
You hear that, Mayor?
There ain't been no bell in them ruins for 10 years, Doc.
No bell? But we heard it.
But I tell
Never
you...
Never mind, Mayor. Now then, son, what happened after that?
Well, after the man ran by, we waited a few moments, and we came to the door and knocked. That's all.
Oh, I see. What do you make of it, Mayor?
Don't like it. Think they're lying.
But we're not. Listen, let me call up the police.
Police?
The police? Listen, I'm mayor of the City of the Dead, and what I say goes.
Yes, sir.
And I ain't never had any police in this city, and I ain't never gonna have.
And besides, there isn't any telephone here.
But I saw a telephone wire.
Son, you heard me say there was no telephone here.
Oh, but I've got to let my mother know.
I'm sorry, Miss Carroll. It seems to be fate.
But what are we going to do? No one ever comes by this way.
Well, Mayor Friday will put you up for the night, I think. He has a couple of extra rooms, eh, Mayor?
Oh, sure.
Oh, but I've got to get home tonight.
Now, Miss Carroll, you better just take it all as an adventure and make the best of it. Isn't that right, son?
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe if we started to walk back, we could pick up a ride when we hit the main highway.
No. We couldn't think of letting you do that. You simply must accept Mayor Friday's hospitality. Now, I'll tell you what. While the mayor is fixing up your rooms, I'll brew us a cup of coffee.
But I don't want any coffee.
Oh, tut, of course you do. Yeah, there's still a fire in the kitchen stove. And the kettle's almost to a boil. We'll have coffee in a jiffy.
But I want to go home.
Don't say any more, Phyllis.
Jimmy, what does it mean?
I don't know. Something's up. I don't get it, but we better play up to him. Pretend like you thought nothing was the matter.
Are we prisoners?
Looks like it. Now, don't worry, though. I can take on these two old duffers if I have to.
Well, but who is this duck person?
Oh, here he comes.
Now then, coffee's all ready. Hey, there you are, Miss Carroll.
Thank you.
Yeah, and there you are, Mr. Parker.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Here's some buns. Better if they're hot, but they'll do for this sort of a snack.
No, thank you. I'll just have coffee.
Sir, I thought that Mr. Mayor Friday lived here alone.
You wonder who I am, eh? Well, I'm what your city doctors would call an old codger, I'm afraid. Just an old country doctor. Doc Tuner is what they call me.
But I wouldn't think they'd need a physician in the City of the Dead.
No, the City of the Dead isn't my seat of practice. That is, I should say, it wasn't my seat of practice. You see, son, I'm retired now. All my patients are dead.
Dead?
All of them?
Well, it's this way, young folks. I was a family doctor and had my little practice and was like a member of each family that I doctored. I knew all the little troubles and every pain of each of my patients. Never seemed to hanker to add new patients to my clientele, especially as I grew older. More coffee, Miss Carroll?
It does taste good.
Well, as time went on, I found myself laying more and more of my patients to rest in the City of the Dead.
But there hasn't been anyone buried in the City of the Dead for the last 10 years.
Well, this was years ago, son. Well, finally, about 10 years ago, I discovered that all the families I'd doctored were either dead or had moved away. As I hadn't added any new patients, I was a doctor without a practice.
But couldn't you have got more?
Oh, suppose I could, but I never made a practice of it, so I didn't hanker to begin trying at my age. I was getting well along, and besides, I had enough to live on.
Oh, I see.
Which means that you don't see it all. Well, son, as I said, I lost the last of my patients about the time they closed the City of the Dead as a burying place and opened up a newfangled cemetery over on the other side of the city. My last patient just slipped in under the bars, you might say. Last person to be buried here.
All your patients are buried in this great City of the Dead?
Every one of them. So you can see the City of the Dead has a very soft place in my heart. I often come down here and stay a spell with the mayor. It's kind of like being with old friends. Going down there among those little white headstones brings back all the old days to me.
And you just happen to be here on a visit tonight?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Oh, here comes the mayor.
Well, your room's just ready.
Now, that's good. I suppose, Miss Carroll, you'd better take the first room. Mr. Parker, you take the one right next to it. Is that right, Mayor?
Don't make no difference.
Well, good night. I hope you both sleep well. I'll call you for breakfast.
Good night, Dr. Tuner. And you too, Mr. Mayor Friday.
Good night, son. And you, Miss Carroll.
Yes. Good night.
Night, Phil. Remember, I'm right next door.
Night, Jim.
And now you, son.
Yeah. Hi. Hi out there. Hey, what do you mean by locking the door? Oh, Phyllis?
Jimmy, is that you?
Yes, Phyllis, they've locked me in and the window's barred.
Out of the night come two youngsters. Into the web of intrigue woven by two strange old characters they fall. Prisoners of Doc Tuner and Mayor Friday. Just who are? But before we go into that, a word from our sponsor. Having locked Jimmy Parker and Phyllis Carroll in adjoining bedrooms in the caretaker's cottage, old Doc Tuner and Mayor Friday are out among the gravestones investigating.
Well, look here, Mayor. We won't be able to find anything down here among the graves this time of night.
Yeah, moon's good. Anyway, I know every stick and stone in the City of the Dead. I'll know if anybody's been prowling around.
But morning will do just as well.
No, it won't. I'm going to look, and if I catch anybody prowling around, well, I got my gun.
But if the men got away, as those youngsters said...
Supposing they ain't telling the truth. All that nonsense about hearing a church bell.
Well, the girl was telling the truth, Mayor. I know the truth when I hear it.
Dang funny. Ain't no church bells within 20 miles of here. I tell you, Doc, I'm just going to raise old Ned if I catch anybody bothering any of my citizens. They come to the City of the Dead to rest, and I'm going to see that they get it.
No, of course, Mayor, but what gets me is why anyone should want to rob a 10-year-old grave and let... By Jove, Mayor.
Huh?
Well, never mind now. This is going to take some thinking over. I'll tell you when we get back to the house. Look yonder at the wisp of fog among the stones.
Yeah, them's the first bits of fog sweeping down the valley. Another couple of hours and the whole city will be so thick you can cut yourself a hunk.
Strange how I love this old place. Those wisps of fog remind me of rays, nice friendly phantoms.
Reckon you have the same feel about this place as me. Listen.
There's your church bell.
But there ain't any bell, I tell you. I seen them take it out of the tower 10 years back when they quit using it.
Yeah, maybe your ears are deceiving you, but personally, I hear church bells.
Gee, this is a fella that creeps, don't it?
Yeah, it seems to me there are altogether too many mysterious things happening in the City of the Dead, if you get what I mean.
I don't.
Well, for a city of quiet, decent folk that are supposed to be at their last resting place, there's a beastly lot of nocturnal activity.
Listen. Bell stopped.
Say, I got a thought, Mayor.
Yeah?
Why don't you put old Lammy Fink to keep a lookout at night? If he saw a prowler...
He'd have a fit. Lammy Fink. That addle brain wouldn't stay in the City of the Dead after dark for anything on earth.
Well, to be honest about it, Mayor, it looks to me like the kids are telling the truth. In the morning, we'd better feed them and send them on their way.
And have them go home and tell a long rigmarole about Otto bandits and hysterical men and phantom church bells and us locking them up for the night?
Well, you can't keep them locked up indefinitely. Better turn them loose before any more harm's done.
Mighty funny they should show up right at this time. Looks queer to me. Somebody's been monkeying around in the City of the Dead for the last week. Then we up and catch a couple. Don't seem natural to me that they should be innocent.
Well, then I lied to him about the telephone. That's something else for him to talk about.
Guy's sakes, Doc. If they went to the police with all that, the City of the Dead would be run over with police and thrill hunters for weeks. I ain't gonna have it. What's this? Look here.
Man's cap.
Yes, it's a cap, all right.
Recognize it?
Yes.
You don't say, Mayor.
Yes. Belongs to Lammy Fink.
Don't tell much. Might have left it here yesterday while he was working.
No, he didn't. I was by this way after he left last night. Wasn't here then. Anyway, he was working down at the other end of the city. And again, I seen him when he left after work, and he had it on his head then.
Well, those are three pretty definite reasons to make us believe that Lammy Fink isn't so afraid of the City of the Dead after dark as you thought. Likewise, it rather indicates that Lammy was down here tonight.
I know Lammy. He wasn't down here. Not if he could help it, he wasn't.
You're a stubborn fellow, Mayor. You deny their church bells even when you hear them. Now you intimate that a man's cap has arrived on the scene without reason or assistance.
Well, things ain't like they should be, Doc. Something's the matter. Somebody's desecrating the City of the Dead.
Well, the thing to do is to question Lammy tomorrow.
Shh, wait, listen.
Church bell again. Hey, I'm beginning to think you're right about investigating that old church. I'll go down with you tomorrow.
I ain't gonna wait till tomorrow. I'm going down there now.
Oh, come now, Mayor. It's getting foggier than the deuce. You won't be able to see anything.
Going anyway. If there's anything there, I'll see it.
Oh, what's the use of chasing phantom church bells this time of night?
Don't come if you don't want to. I'm going.
Well, if you're going, I might as well go, too.
You ain't fidgety at your age, are you, Doc?
Who, me? Blamed old fool. Come on.
Thank you.
Well, now that we're here, what are you going to do about it? Can't see a blame thing.
Not a flashlight, Doc. Always carry one.
Dilapidated old ruin. Should have been torn down long ago.
Come on, I'll lead.
And look out where you step. Every board's full of rottenness. Floor's liable to collapse and let you through.
I ought to know that. Been in here often enough.
Hey, what in tunkets there?
Nothing but the rafters creaking. Can't you feel the whole building sway when the wind blows? It's that old.
Yeah, it holds your bangs likely to crash down on us.
I reckon so. Keep quiet.
What the deuce for? You don't expect to run into anything here, do you? Most folks have better sense than to risk their neck in this candle place.
If a bell rung, somebody rung it.
But you said there wasn't any bell.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I was in here is when we buried old man Burton. It's more than 10 years back. You remember old man Burton, Mayor?
Yeah.
Yeah, walked down this very aisle behind his coffin.
Oh, Lord Almighty, Mayor.
Just a screech owl, Doc.
That's the blamedest noise.
Shh, hold it.
I told you we should have waited till morning.
It ain't nothing. Come on.
Where are you going now?
You're going to climb up this here ladder into the belfry.
No, we're not.
I am.
Like as not, one of the rungs will give way and you'll break your neck.
I'm going to chance it.
Well, then let me go first.
No. This here's my funeral.
Now, be careful there. Listen to those rungs squeak under your weight.
Yeah, a little hole, I guess. Are you coming?
Yes, of course. Hold that light down here so I can see what I'm doing. All right. I'm right behind you.
All right, Doc. You
wait for me at the top of the ladder.
Yeah.
If anything doing, I might as well be in on it.
Yeah. All right, Doc.
Yeah, except for a bad case of goose pimples.
Now, I'm going to turn on the flashlight. Better crouch down in case there should be anything.
I'm crouched.
Mm-hmm. Look out! Look out! Huh? What's the matter?
Didn't you see it?
See what?
Whatever made that noise?
There was pigeons. Scared the pie out of them.
But I saw a shape, shadows.
Yeah, just a pigeon flying around.
I don't believe it. I saw something big.
Oh. Yeah, where is it then? Couldn't have gone down the ladder. Couldn't have jumped out of the belfry without busting its neck.
Yeah, have your own way. Anyway, there isn't any bell up here.
Exactly like I told you.
So, you see, we had all this monkey business for nothing. You satisfied now?
I heard a bell tonight.
Yeah, of course you did. So did I.
Where did it come from? Ain't no other buildings around for 20 miles.
Yeah, looks to me like you've deepened your mystery rather than solved it.
Yeah. Look. Cobwebs all over the place. Ain't nobody else been up here for years. Anybody could tell that.
Hey, Mayor, let's go back to the house to do our cogitating. I'm not what you'd call comfortable perched up here in this old belfry.
Yeah, reckon we might as well go down.
Yeah. Glad that's over. I'd make a blamed poor monkey at my age.
Come along.
Now, where do you think you're going?
Well, as long as I'm here, might as well look over the whole place.
You're sure anxious to break a leg. You feel how springy these floorboards are? Liable to give away any minute.
We'll take a look behind the altar.
Yeah, what's back there?
Well, it used to be the preacher's study. It was never used, though, after the old bell ringer committed suicide in there.
Well, so, Mayor, I'd forgotten about that. Old Sammy Martin hanged himself, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, locked the study off and never used it after that. Of course I remember now. 15 years ago, if it was a day.
It ain't locked no more, don't reckon.
Look here, Mayor, I'm not so certain I like this.
Like what?
Well, we've got a dead bell ringer.
Yeah?
No, we've got a phantom bell. You think there's any connection?
No. You?
I hope not.
Whoever heard of a doctor being scared of ghosts?
I don't recollect saying anything about being frightened. I'm just putting two and two together.
Claire! Where are you? Where's the light? Are you hurt?
I'm all right. Just broke through the floor and...
Hurt? Have you got the light?
No. I just skinned my shin. Blast this rotten place.
But the light...
Yes, here it is. I hung on to it.
My soul, what was that?
Come from the study, didn't it?
Yes, sounded so.
Shh. Oh, it's only the rafters. Here, help me pull my leg out of this danged hole.
Wait a minute until I turn on the light.
No, leave it off. We'll sneak up on the study.
What do you mean, sneak up?
Here, give me your hand.
There you are. Now, look here, Mayor, I've had enough for one night.
I'm gonna see what made that noise.
No fat chance of sneaking up on anything after the crash you made when you fell.
We'll sneak up to the door and throw it open.
Yeah, and get shot for our trouble.
No, we won't. Be lying flat on the floor.
Yeah.
Yes, then we'll wriggle into the room.
Now, listen, I'm no snake.
Then we'll wait until we hear a noise.
You're crazy, Mayor.
Yes, maybe so. Anyway, as soon as we hear a noise, we'll flash on the light and nab whoever's there.
Just as easy as that.
Come on now. Don't make a sound. Here's the door. Lie down flat.
Right in front of the door?
Yes. It swings in. I'm right alongside you.
Well, who's going to open the door?
I am. I've unlatched it. All I got to do is give it a push.
Well, push.
What? Ow! Oh, great jumping Caesar. What was that, Doc?
Oh, I don't know, but whatever it was, it ran the full length of me.
Stepped on you?
Stepped on me and dang near ground me into the floor. Stepped smack on my head.
Are you hurt?
Well, I don't feel any too good.
Can you walk?
Oh, of course.
Well, our ghost seems to have gotten away. Turn on the light. Let's get into the room and look around.
Yeah, I could do with some light. There. Mayor, I haven't told you the worst yet.
Huh? The worst?
Yes, the worst. Mayor, whoever it was that ran over me didn't have shoes on. Look where his nails scratched my face.
Oh, gosh almighty, Doc. Wasn't it a man?
I tell you, he was barefooted, if it was.
Gee, Rushi. It'd take claws to make scratches like that. Here, tie your face up with this handkerchief. It's bleeding.
I hope you're satisfied.
Now, just a minute. I want to look around this study. Give me the flashlight.
No limit to your curiosity.
There it is again. Whatever it is, it's hanging about outside. Look there, Doc. It's a bell rope.
Bell rope?
Yes, see it? That claw-footed man, or whatever it is, has been ringing the bell from in here. Look where it disappears through the ceiling.
It's a new rope. Mayor, what are you doing?
I'm going to ring that dang bell.
Now, you want to prove to yourself that there is a bell, huh?
Yeah, of course there's a bell. I always knew there was.
Well, go ahead. Pull it. My face hurts.
I'll give it a yank that'll pull the whole contraption down.
Well, pull.
Yeah, here goes.
Mayor! He's shot. It wasn't a bell, it was a trap.
You have just heard the opening episode of The City of the Dead, especially written and produced for your sponsor by Carlton E. Morse. What is this clawfoot thing? What is the meaning of the phantom church bell? Why are Jimmy and Phyllis held prisoners? And finally, who shot Mayor Friday? And how and why? The mystery grows deeper and creepier next week with Chapter 2 entitled, I've Dug Up Something Ghastly.
Elliot Lewis as Captain Friday. Elliot Lewis, who went on to become the skipper of the Scarlet Queen. Tonight, Captain Friday in episode 1 of The City of the Dead from The Adventures by Morse. That episode, the first of 10, came from January 8, 1944. We'll find out about Chapter 2 and exactly what has been dug up there in The City of the Dead in just a moment, as old-time radio drama continues, right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin and Overture Center. You, too, can help ensure the future of WPR programs for years to come. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Want to know more about a WPR trip or event you heard promoted on air? Our Audience Services Department can help. Contact Audience Services by calling 1-800-747-7444.
You've met the mayor of the City of the Dead, found out that he's been shot, met the old doctor, and you'll hear more about all of them, and then some, as we get into episode 2, I've Dug Up Something Ghastly. City of the Dead, Adventures by Morse, from January 15th, 1944.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents The City of the Dead, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like big adventure, come with me. If you like stealth and intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
But first, our sponsor. The City of the Dead. Midnight in October. A night when almost anything is liable to happen, and much already has. Old Joshua Friday, mayor of the City of the Dead, otherwise known as the caretaker of the old cemetery no longer in use, had just been mysteriously shot. The shooting took place when Mayor Friday pulled a bell rope in the little church ruins at the lower end of the City of the Dead. Old Dr. Tooner and the mayor had been led to the abandoned ruins in their search for the phantom toll of a church bell. They found no bell, just a bell rope. And when the mayor pulled it, he was shot. And now, back in the mayor's cottage at the other end of the City of the Dead. Earlier in the evening, Dr. Tooner and the mayor had locked up young Jimmy Parker and the girl Phyllis Carroll, who had stopped there for aid when their parked car had been stolen from them by gunmen. But that was 9 o'clock. It's midnight now, and Doc Tooner had carried the unconscious body of his friend from the old church back to the caretaker's cottage.
Is he dead?
Of course not. You think I'd lug a dead body through a cemetery at midnight?
How badly is he hurt?
Oh, I reckon it's just a scalp wound.
Who shot him?
I wish I knew, Miss Carroll. Reckon I'll do a bit of telephoning.
But you told us you didn't have a phone.
Did I now?
You most certainly did.
Yeah, guess that's just one of those things.
But look here.
Now, Parker, keep your shirt on. Just sit still and listen while I take care of things.
Oh, so that's where you keep the phone.
Yep. Long distance, please. Uh-huh. Long distance? Listen, Central, will you get me Skyline 2020?
Who is it you're calling?
You'll know in good time.
But...
Hello? Hello, Captain Friday's office? Yeah, well, is Captain Friday in? Good. Hello, Captain? Say, this is Dr. Tooner. Yeah, Doc Tooner. No, nothing much. Say, I'm down with your father in the City of the Dead. Yeah. Now, listen, Captain, something's happened to the mayor. No, no, it's not his heart. He's been shot. No, he ain't gonna die, just a clip on the head. Yeah, I'd tell you if it was serious. But look here, boy. There's something wrong down here. Something wrong, I say. Yeah. Could you come down for a week? Yeah, keep your mouth shut and come down. Good, that's the ticket. And be sure you don't talk. Yeah. Goodbye.
Has Mayor Friday got a son?
Yeah, Captain Friday, private investigator. Owns his own agency up in the city.
And he's coming down here?
He is, and he'll want to talk to you, Sue.
Well, when is he coming down?
A couple hours.
But why can't we call the city?
Not until you talk to the captain.
Dr. Tooner, what on earth is that on your back?
My back?
Yes, there's a footprint on your coat.
You don't say. Yeah, I'll take my coat off.
What kind of a thing made that?
The same thing that scratched my face. Jiminy Crickets, what a footprint.
Did someone knock you down and walk on you? Looks like it.
Who ever heard of a barefooted man running around at midnight in a cemetery?
Well, did he scratch you with his hands?
No, with his claws.
A man with claws?
Well, look at this footprint. That's a human foot, all right, and if those aren't claws at the end of his toes.
Ooh. Well, did you see him?
I did not. I felt him plenty, though.
Yeah, did he shoot the mayor?
Well, I reckon the story will keep until the captain gets here. Hello, that's the mayor.
Oh, is he coming, too?
No, I reckon not. Good sign, though.
Oh,
Oh, I want to get away from this place. Doctor, how long are you going to keep us here?
Well, it depends, Miss Carroll. It depends. Would you rather spend your time here or up at the city in jail?
Jail?
What kind of talk's that? What have we done to be sent to jail?
That remains to be seen. We'll just sit right here and wait.
Dear.
Here he is. That'll be him. Hello, Doc. Hi, Captain Friday. You made a quick trip.
One of the traffic boys brought me down on his motorcycle. How's Dad?
Just as I told you. Not in the slightest danger. Still unconscious, though. This is Miss Phyllis Carroll and James Parker.
Hi. How do you do?
Company, eh?
Well, in a way, maybe.
Not company? What then?
Out here. Supposing you sit down and hear the whole story. There's a deuce of a lot of nonsense going on out here.
Fire away, but first you're sure the old man's okay.
Yes, the wound is hardly a scratch.
That's grazed then, huh?
Mm.
Okay. Go ahead with your story.
Well, in the first place, there have been indications of marauders in the City of the Dead for the last 3 nights.
Yeah?
Footsteps on the gravel. Footprints the next morning. Once the mayor was certain, he saw one down among the graves.
Mm-hmm.
And then tonight, we heard a scream that had raised the dead, and then someone ran by the house sobbing as though scared out of his wits.
Man?
Sounded so. The mayor slipped outside, and pretty soon he shouted to me to open the door, and he brought these two youngsters in.
Well.
And they swear they didn't make the noise.
Did either of them look as though they'd been frightened?
No, they were just nervous. They said they'd just been held up by two gunmen and their car taken away from them.
Better and better. What next?
Well, after they were held up and were walking toward the cottage here, they say this frightened man that the mayor and I heard ran past him.
Did you get a good look at him?
No, we got off the road and we heard him coming.
Too bad.
And then they claimed to have come directly to the house here. They wanted to telephone the police in the city.
And Dr. Tuna said there wasn't a phone in the house.
What was that for, Doc?
Let's pass over that for the moment.
Go on.
Well, Mayor and I took it into our hands to detain these two young people.
Lock them up?
Well, yes, in a way.
High-handed business.
Well, how do we know but what they're grave robbers?
Ever rob a grave, Miss Carroll?
No, sir.
You, Parker?
Do I look like a grave robber?
There you are, Doc. Looks like you and Dad pulled a boner. Now then, what happened?
Oh, yes, I almost forgot about the phantom church bell.
Don't tell me you got a ghost mixed up in this.
Well, these youngsters came in with the story of hearing a bell ringing down at the other end of the City of the Dead.
Down in the old church?
Yes, but the mayor said there wasn't any bell there.
This is beginning to have possibility.
Well, after we locked up these two, we went out to look around, and I'll be a son of a gun if we didn't hear a bell. Well, Captain, your dad's sort of impetuous at times.
Thinks after his son. I bet your money he dragged you down to the old church.
He did, first up in the balcony, and then back to the old study behind the altar.
Isn't that where that old fellow, what's his name, hanged himself?
Yes, it is. Well, as we were creeping up on the room, the most ghastly moan you ever laid ear to came out of the study.
Ah. The ghost.
I was ready to come home by then, but the mayor insisted that we'd had something cornered and we'd ought to capture it. So we laid down on our stomachs and wiggled up to the study door. It was darker than the inside of a pirate's heart. We were lying directly in front of the door, and the mayor shoved it open.
And out popped the ghost.
I wish it had been a ghost. Look how it ripped my face with its claws.
Oh, that's how you got scratched up.
It ran the full length of me, wailing fit to curl your hair.
You don't say.
It ran out of the building, and the mayor and I jumped to our feet, and your dad switched on his flashlight, and the study was empty.
Naturally.
But there was a new bell rope hanging through the ceiling.
The bell?
That's just what your dad thought. He gave the rope a yank, and someone shot him.
Huh? But did the bell ring?
Right. Blamed if I know. I was so rattled, I didn't hear anything. I didn't wait. I grabbed the mayor up on my shoulder and didn't look back till I got home.
Amazing. Offhand, how do you think Dad was shot? There are no windows in the study, as I remember.
No, there ain't. And I'll swear there wasn't anyone in that room but us.
Could anyone have shot from the door?
No, it had swung shut. And besides, the mayor had his back to the door, and he was shot from the front.
Curiouser and curiouser. Tell me more about this animal that gave you the trunk.
Now here, look at that footprint on my coat. Does that look like animal to you?
No. Barefoot man, what do you know?
And look at those claws.
I don't believe it, Doc.
That footprint and these scratches are all the proof I want.
Then I'm supposed to find a barefoot man with claws, a phantom church bell, a hysterical man, not to mention two auto thieves. More than that, I'm supposed to find out why two law-abiding citizens, one of them my own father, have practically kidnapped a perfectly respectable boy and girl.
Mm-hmm. I reckon you'll be just as well off not to book into that bangle very close. Oh, yeah, and there was something else. You know the mayor's got a sort of a half-wit gardener working for him.
Old Lammy Fink? Mm. Is he figuring on this, too?
Well, we found his cap down among the tombstones as we were going down to the church. Here it is. The mayor said he saw Lammy wear it home from work last evening, and it looks to me like Lammy was back in the City of the Dead last night.
No, not Lammy. He's scared to death of this cemetery after dark.
Mm, that's what your dad said, Captain.
Now, that's the truth. I know Lammy. He wouldn't come near the place after sunset.
Yeah, then explain the hat.
Give me time, Doc. Give me time. I've been here a half hour yet.
Look here, you two talk and talk. Aren't you going to let us call the city?
Well, what about it, Doc? Going to let our young friends depart in peace now?
No, look here, Captain Friday. We can't do that. I want to talk to you alone for a spell.
All right, Doc, if you're ready to talk. You don't mind if Dr. Tooner and I adjourn to the kitchen for a little chat, do you? Come on, Doc. Well, it's like this, kids. Dr. Tooner has thrown new light on this business. Suppose you tell me, Mr. Parker, who you are, what you do.
I'm a student at the University of California, junior year.
I see. Living with your parents?
No, I have a room in a small hotel.
What hotel?
In Britain.
Would you be missed if you didn't show up for, say, a week?
Well, I suppose so.
I see. What about you, Miss Carroll?
I don't work anywhere.
Live at home?
With my mother.
What's your address?
The Brundell Apartments on Jackson Street.
Any phone?
Franklin, 7076. But you aren't going to keep us here, are you?
Tell me this, Mr. Parker. How did you happen to come down to the City of the Dead tonight?
Just driving.
No ulterior motive. I mean, besides the moon and the girl.
No.
Well, look here, you two. You seem to have gotten yourselves into a mess.
But no.
Yes, wittingly or unwittingly. Now then, you have a choice. Either you remain here for a week and submit to being locked up tonight and having a guard at all other times, or else I'll have to take you back to the city and have you locked up.
We haven't done anything.
Well, that's to be proven. I can have the police hold you for investigation.
Well, I don't understand it. I don't know what it's all about.
You can't do this to us.
Nevertheless, it's happening. Now then, which shall it be?
I don't want to say.
I want to go home.
Well, that's impossible at the moment, Miss Carroll. If you chose to stay here, I'll make it right with your mother. Likewise with your hotel partner.
Oh, Jimmy.
We could get out on bail.
Not on a held for investigation charge, you couldn't. Believe me, I'd advise you to stay. Jail's a rotten place to spend time.
Oh, yes. Oh, please, let's stay here, Jimmy.
All right. We'll stay.
Good. I'll run up to the city in the morning. Probably get back tomorrow afternoon about 5.
You're going to the city to check up on Jimmy and me?
Is there any harm in that?
No. No, I guess not.
That's fine. You two wait here a minute. I want a word with Dr. Cool.
Oh, Jimmy, darling, what have we got ourselves into?
Well, get hold of yourself.
I knew we shouldn't have come. I knew it all the time.
Then the youngsters, Phyllis and Jimmy Parker, aren't so innocent of the night activities as they're pretending. What will Captain Friday have to report when he returns from the city? But first, our sponsor.
Again.
Yeah, back from the city already? Quick trip, Captain Friday.
Yep, sitting pretty. Oh, hello, Miss Carroll. Didn't see you and Jimmy.
Did you see my mother?
I did, the first thing this morning when I got to the city. I left her not the least bit worried.
But how did you explain?
Don't give it a thought. Just settle down and have a good time while you're here. How's the mayor, Doc?
Yeah, he came too just after you left this morning. His feelings are rotten. I gave him a mild powder. Still sleeping.
Did you tell him you brought me down here?
Yeah.
What did he say?
Well, he growled a little bit, but he's really tickled.
He was. Old son of a gun. Say, Doc, what time are you going to give us some dinner?
Oh, in about an hour, if Miss Carroll here will give me a hand.
Why, of course I will.
Well, that'll give Parker and me a little time to look about. Like to come along with me, Parker?
Why, sure.
Good. We'll take a run down among the tombstones. See you later, Doc. It's been a long time since I had a good look at the City of the Dead.
Oh, that's all?
Mm-hmm. Here, let's cut across this way.
Where are we going?
I want to look over the ground where the mayor and Dr. Tooner picked up Lammy Fink's cap last night. Did Lammy show up for work this morning?
I guess not. I heard the mayor and Dr. Tooner talking about it when the mayor came too. Doc promised to go over to Lammy's cabin and see what was the matter.
Did he go?
I suppose that's where he went. Anyway, he locked Phyllis and me up about noon and was away for a couple of hours.
Yeah. Be careful where you walk and let me know if you find any footprints. Not that you're likely to find any on this grass.
Captain Friday, what's it all about? Why are you keeping us here like this?
Answer me one question, Parker, and perhaps I can answer both of yours.
Well, if I can.
What were you and Miss Carroll actually doing here at the City of the Dead last night?
I told you.
See, there you are. You won't play square with me. How can you expect me to be on the up and up with you?
But I tell you, it was just an accident that brought us here last night.
And I tell you, I think you're lying.
Look, just because you're a private detective...
Now, Parker, don't get nasty. If you don't want to talk, it's all right with me. I'll find out for myself eventually. In the meantime, our relationship can be pleasant or strained. However you want it.
You won't find anything out about me. You took the trouble to look me up while you were in town.
I did take the trouble.
Well?
I found you just what you purported yourself to be. A junior at the University of California. Likewise, Miss Carroll told the truth.
Well, doesn't that satisfy you?
Under ordinary conditions, I'd be willing to give you the benefit of the doubt. These are extraordinary circumstances.
In what way?
That remains to be seen. All right, just a minute. Here we are. Dr. Tooner said they found the cap just a little to the left of old Lady Gregory's grave. If I remember, that would be right over there.
You mean you know every one of these 10,000 graves by heart?
Well, not all of them. I got a pretty good idea of the lay of the land here. You see, when I was a kid, this was my playground.
What a curious childhood.
Yeah, that's the grave, all right. Now then, supposing we do a little looking around.
Exactly what do you expect to find?
I don't know. Look here. If Lammy Fink was here among the graves after dark last night for some diabolical reason, and believe me, it would take the devil and a legion of his assistants to get him here. There must have been a reason for him leaving his cap behind.
And you expect to find out what took him away in such a hurry that he didn't have time to stop for his cap?
No, it would help.
Say, don't you suppose the fellow that ran by us sobbing was Lammy, do you?
I've been wondering if it couldn't have been. Since I heard about this cap business. Sounds like something Lammy would do. Found anything?
No, sir. You?
Yep. Rather what I expected to find.
What? Well, what was it? I don't see anything.
You don't, huh? Come on, I've come to see. Let's get back to the cottage. Doc will be having supper for us by the time we get in and cleaned up.
But... what was it you saw, Captain Friday?
You'll find out soon enough, Parker. Don't push me. I'm not much for going off before I'm primed and loaded. I promise you this much, however. This is going to be the biggest night this cemetery's had in a lot of years.
You've had your supper, Mayor. Don't you think you better turn in? You look sort of peaked.
Not on your life. I ain't going to spend much time in bed from now on till I catch the fellow that shot me.
Well, that's what I'm down here for, Dan.
I'll catch my own gunman, young fella.
Yeah, you probably will at that. Now, but look, now that we're all gathered around in one big family, what do you say to a little intimate chat?
About what particularly, Captain?
Well, for instance, what about Lammy Fink?
Nothing.
What does that mean?
I said there was nothing about him. He wasn't home.
You mean he's moved out?
No, he just wasn't around. Clothes, food, and the likes were all there.
Well, that's something. Maybe Lammy was down in the City of the Dead last night after all.
Yeah, don't believe it. Been down at the old church yet, son?
No, not yet, Mayor. Trip to the city took most of the day. Did have a look around the place where you folks picked up Lammy's cap, though.
Find anything?
I did.
You did? What did you find, boy?
Before I tell you, I want to ask Miss Carroll a question. Do you mind, Miss Carroll?
Why, of course not.
Good. What would you expect to find if you opened the grave?
Why do you say that? Why do you look at me like that?
Say, what are you trying to do?
Suppose you keep out of this, Parker.
An asinine question if I ever heard one.
Yeah. Perhaps you'd like to answer the question yourself.
Sure. Offhand, I'd say a corpse.
Not a half bad guess. Somebody evidently wasn't quite so certain.
Look here, Captain, what are you getting at?
That's what I say. Somebody evidently wasn't quite certain just what one does keep in a grave.
What do you mean?
Somebody opened one down in the City of the Dead last night.
Opened a grave?
What? Robbing a grave in my city? By thunder,
Dad, take it easy. You know anything about it, Miss Carroll?
Why, no. No, of course not.
Anything to say, Parker?
Do I look like a grave robber? Besides, how do you know a grave was opened?
So where the turf had been carefully cut about the edges and then replaced. It was old Ernie Morton's grave, Doc.
Ernie Morton's grave, eh? Think of that, Mary. Think of anyone wanting to disturb poor old Ernie Morton's bone.
I'll have somebody's hide for this.
Thought we'd go down this evening and see whether the ghouls carried Ernie away with them.
Here she is. Here's the grave.
Yep, this is the one, Mayor. Strip off your coat, Parker. You and I are going in for a little heavy exercise.
I'm to help dig?
That's the idea. Hey, see here? The sod's all loose. We'll lift it off first, and then it can be replaced.
The ghouls who did this knew their business.
That's a neat job, huh, Dad? No, excuse me.
Keep out of your way. It is a neat job at that, eh, Mayor?
Yeah, too neat. It'd take an expert to cut up the sod as perfectly as this and replace it in this manner.
Know anyone who could do it besides yourself, Dan?
Any landscape gardener could do it.
Here, Parker, pile a sod like this so we can fit it back together when we get through. Could Lammy Fink do it?
Lammy? Why, of course he could.
Yeah. So I thought.
But look here, son. You can't make me believe Lammy'd come down here and open a grave himself.
Hey, listen to that, Captain.
Church bell, all right.
Yeah, coming from down toward the old church, too.
Looks like I'm going to have to take a run through the ruins tomorrow.
Yeah, go through in the daytime. No godly man would ever go in there at night. Mayor and I know, don't you, Mayor?
Yeah.
Now, enough of the heavy work, Parker. Here's a shovel. You work at this end, and I'll work at the head for a while. When we get down a foot or two, we'll have to work in relays. There won't be room for us both.
I'm not used to this sort of thing.
You're not, huh? What about those blisters on your fingers and the palms of your hands?
Blisters?
Certainly. You don't suppose I'd overlook your hands, do you?
Well, I didn't get them digging up bodies.
Looked to me as if they were made by a shovel.
Suppose they were.
Well?
Why don't they stop ringing that bell?
Getting on your nerves?
Yes, it is.
What about those blisters?
Well, I'm working my way through college, if you must know.
So?
Got a job gardening.
It's the use of lying. It'll only make it worse for you.
I'm not lying.
Here, rest a moment. Get your breath.
Yeah, you're making good headway. Down about a foot and a half already.
Yeah, the dirt's still loose. It's easy digging.
Yeah, don't you want me to take a hand at shoveling?
No, Doc. You'd creak under the weight of a shovel full of dirt.
Thanks for nothing. You know, it's been 20 years since we laid Ernie away. Do you remember it, Mayor?
Yeah.
It was storming to beat the deuce. There wasn't anyone present except you and me and the two gravediggers and the fellow that drove the hearse.
Yeah, Doc, I remember. One of the gravediggers had to keep bailing out the grave until we could get Ernie into it.
Did you help bury all of your patients, Dr. Tour?
Every last one of them. Sort of a little courtesy, if you get what I mean. I saw them through life, saw them safely tucked away in the ground, and now I sort of watch over them while I sleep.
Now, go to it, Parker, if you got your breath. You take a shift down in the hole, and then I'll follow you.
Yeah, sure, but...
Well?
Well, suppose I dig into something. That'd be awful.
Well, suppose you do. Sing out, and we'll all come down and take a look.
I don't like it.
Good full moon tonight.
Yeah.
I never stood around on one foot in a graveyard at night before. It does give a fellow the creeps, don't it?
Getting a molly grubble?
Yeah. You begin to see things.
Bless my soul, did you hear that?
That's it. That's it, son.
What do you mean?
It's the claw-footed man.
Claw-footed man, huh? I don't see anything.
There. Over there. There's something white moving.
It disappeared.
Oh.
Listen. Captain Friday. Captain Friday.
What is it? What's the matter, Parker?
I've dug up something ghastly. His dead arm is reaching up to me.
You have just heard the second episode of The City of the Dead, written and produced by Carlton E. Morse. What was it that Jimmy Parker uncovered in the grave? What was the phantom at which Captain Friday shot? What will the old church ruins reveal by daylight? Come with us next week when you will hear the third episode entitled The Body That Walked Off.
Well, my friend, we are a long way from figuring out what's going on in the City of the Dead. Skullduggery, you can be sure of that. That was the episode from January 15th, 1944, and then we'll keep right on going to the exciting conclusion over the course of the next few weeks. I'm Norman Gilliland. Thanks for being with me, and I hope you can join me next time by the glow of your radio. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you.
Thank you.